But if he did, the question was, would really Rudy Giuliani run as an independent? And if so, how would he fare? And my instinct is to say that he might actually suffer negatively at both ends. I think that the independent-minded voters that might gravitate to him would probably gravitate to a Democrat. And if the conservatives had...
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
This is the Quality News Network. A British think tank has published a 12-page report which says the Iraqi government is unable to control vast areas of the country, which is on the verge of collapse. The Chatham House report also indicates that there are several civil wars going on in Iraq, and the U.S. security crackdown has failed to cut down the overall violence across the country. South of Baghdad today, three U.S. soldiers were killed by a roadside bomb. 53 U.S. forces have been killed so far this month in the Iraq War. Tony Blair is currently in the U.S. on his last trip as Prime Minister. He met with President Bush, and the two held a press conference today at the White House Rose Garden. Both defended their decision to go to war in Iraq and stay there, despite public opposition to the war in both countries. Despite a ceasefire to end the recent fighting between the Hamas and Fatah factions in Gaza, five more Palestinians have died in the conflict. Israel also launched three airstrikes against Hamas today in response to the repeated rocket attacks by Hamas. Three Palestinians were killed in that action. A bipartisan agreement on immigration was reached today. Senators Edward Kennedy and Lindsey Graham announced the plan, which will offer quick legal status to the millions of illegal immigrants currently in the country. It would also create a guest worker program. The U.S. Census Bureau reports that the minority population in the country is more than 100 million. That equals about a third of the entire population. Hispanics are the fastest growing minority population and the largest minority group. Senate leaders met with the White House Chief of Staff today on Capitol Hill to discuss the Iraq War funding bill. President Bush vetoed the first spending bill he received because it contained a timetable for U.S. troop withdrawal from Iraq. Senator Arlen Specter, the top Republican on the Senate Judiciary Committee, predicted today that Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez would resign as a result of the probe into the firing of eight U.S. prosecutors last year. Two Democratic senators will seek a no-confidence vote on the Attorney General, which may come next week. World Bank President Paul Wolfowitz has been under fire about a pay raise he arranged for his girlfriend, and he may be negotiating an agreement to resign his post. However, he wants to clear his name before he quits, according to reports. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Attention business owners. Getting new customers is now just one click away. Sounds too good to be true, right? Well, you got us. It's actually two clicks away with the new MyLocalYP.com. MyLocalYP.com is more than an online Yellow Pages. It's an interactive gateway that connects customers with your business, all in just two clicks. Why continue to pay thousands of dollars on an antique advertising medium, especially one that ends up going into the recycling bin? Make the smart upgrade at only a fraction of the cost. Try for yourself. MyLocalYP.com. MyLocalYP.com will put your business in the radar of thousands of potential customers. They'll be able to make reservations online, even print out the map with directions, all in just two clicks. Call 1-800-505-1883 today to find out more about this great new service. The sooner you do, the faster your cash register will start to ring. The number again is 1-800-505-1883. MyLocalYP.com.
Marine biologists unsuccessfully tried to use whale song to lure an injured humpback whale and her calf out of a Sacramento shipping channel and back out into the open water of the Pacific Ocean. Both of the animals have wounds from a boat's propeller. New York's attorney general is suing Dell Computer for fraud, false advertising, and deceptive business practices. The computer company is accused of failing to deliver on promised customer service and bait-and-switch advertising on its financing. Discovery Communications will shut down its 103 retail stores, which will mean a loss of 1,000 jobs, or about a quarter of the company's entire workforce. The Labor Department reported that jobless claims hit the lowest level in 4 months. Last week, the number of applications for unemployment benefits dropped to 293,000. The world's most expensive hybrid car is the Lexus LS600H. That gasoline-electric car went on sale in Japan today and will be available worldwide soon. The price tag, $124,000. Light sweet crude is trading at $64.86 a barrel, and at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was down 11 points, ending the day at 13,476. The NASDAQ was down 8, and the S&P 500 down 1. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
Okay! Don't you!
South America!
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! You know what? This isn't a rerun. I'm Bob Kincaid, and I'm live. I was supposed to have been on the road this evening. I'm not on the road because... You know, we installed some new phones here in the studio, and we haven't quite learned how to turn the damn ringer off yet. Sorry. See, it's just really not professional when the new phone rings in the studio. That's why there's not a ringer on the highfalutin the telephone hybrid equipment.
I understand.
Really?
Really?
Oh, yeah, you're number one in my book, too, Agnes.
I didn't do anything bad.
Yes, you did. You're bad, 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 bad. There is a law out there identified by my father some years back. It's a corollary to Murphy's Law. You know, Murphy's Law says anything bad that can happen will happen, and at the worst possible moment. Well, there's Kincaid's corollary, and it goes like this: if there is a jackleg, broke down, miserable piece of crap out there in the universe, someone in our family will find a way to own it. And that is... And you don't necessarily have to know the minute you buy it. Now, most of you probably know, the plan was for me to be on the road to Alabama this evening to take care of a little bit more of the business at... relating to my father's stuff. Didn't happen. It didn't happen because I thought I had a slow leak in my one of my tires on the truck. Went to get it fixed, and you know how they swab it with the soap, and you see the bubble, and you find the hole, and you plug the hole. Well, there wasn't a hole in the tire. The rims were rusted through. To the point, it was just little rust molecules holding together, making the wheel retain anything resembling structural integrity. And then I went to find it, so I thought, okay, I'll go buy some rims. You know, because I don't buy truck rims every day. I didn't realize that nobody keeps them in stock. How many lugs on that rim? 8. Dang. Yeah, I never see them. So, you know, you finally break down and you call the Dodge dealership. It's a Dodge truck. Well, you should have been driving a Chevy. Stop it. It's a Dodge. It just is what it is. Well, them's going to be $225 a piece. You know, just gives you the fan tods thinking about it. And so the day has been spent trying to find a new set because it's unsafe. One fellow said to me, I wouldn't drive this thing 600 miles. I wouldn't drive it six. So I finally found through a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend a guy who owns a junkyard, and got some ordered, you know, from a salvage yard. Oh boy. Yeah, hope they're not rusted through. but this is just another day in the life. But it's a good day. It's a beautiful day. It's lovely outside. Hope it's lovely where you are too. And you know, I hope you'll jump in, chime in, participate, communicate this evening as we discuss the various and sundry events of the day. And there's a lot of them. This has all been a big fraud. The fact of the matter was, I have been drunker than a lord for the last 48 hours celebrating the death of Jerry Falwell, okay? I just have.
Oh, you're so full of it.
And peeing in a 55-gallon drum so I can go and dump it on his grave. They better bury him in some, I don't know, dig up the floorboards of Thomas Road Baptist Church to bury him or something. Because I'm not the only one that feels this way. Oh, you're just sinking to their level. Good, let me sink. Hateful old bigot. Freak. Religious moron who didn't understand 10 cents worth of the message of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter. Next up, Pat Robertson. On deck, James Dobson. Sorry, I'm playing. But I still can't get Ding Dong the Witch is Dead out of my head. That one's turned into an absolute earworm.
He's dead and I'm old. Let's go past him.
She's not old. Not old at all. She's got her own. We're going to have to build her own website and give her own fan page.
No.
It's just, you know. I'm jealous. What do you want? I'm jealous. Everybody loves Agnes. She's almost a TV show, you know. Everybody loves Agnes. Ugh. So there is a good bit of stuff to talk about this evening. I've been reading for a couple of days, trying to figure out what to do with it, how to deal with it. You remember when we talked? I assume you do. I do. Several months back, and periodically thereafter, about the young man who basically was killed at one of those juvenile detention facilities in Florida. The one where there was video of a whole host of adults, from prison guards to registered nurses, standing around and watching a 14-year-old young man die. Well, it turns out that's not an isolated incident. It turns out that it's happening with incredibly disturbing frequency. And this latest story is just another little horror dispatch from America's punishment fetish. See, we have prisons for a reason. It used to be that the reason was A, punishment, and B, rehabilitation. Well, but the reason we have them now is, they're called for-profit prisons for a reason. We incarcerate and warehouse human beings for profit. Ugh. Oh, and Agnes, by the way, I'm watching the chat room over here. I'm not the only one who's got his 55-gallon drum out for Falwell. Bless his heart, our good pal Lottie in the chat room just said, "Give me a case of beer, and I'll turn Jerry Falwell's grave into a swimming pool." Mean liberals, bad liberals. Ah, jeez. But no, I've got that story. We'll probably get to it this evening, and something. Now, this is the 17th day of May, and I'm wondering what kind of resolution took place today in the case of Tyler Froatz II. Okay, maybe I'm screwing up the last name. Froatz II. Tyler Froatz? Froatz? Because this guy's a freak, and you'll understand why I say so in a minute. Today was to be his court date after he was apprehended on May 1st as a counter-protester to an immigration rally that took place in the D.C. area. Tyler Froatz II, an Eagle Scout and resident of the District of Columbia for the past 18 months, was to be held in police custody until today. And I haven't found anything to tell me what the outcome of the hearing today was. On May the 1st, which was a Tuesday, Froatz was protesting the protesters. You know how that works with the professional media. You get 2 million people out to protest this filthy, stinking, rotten, illegal war, and 14 weird freepers with signs that say "Get a clue, moron," are standing on the other side, and the professional media says protesters from both sides of the issue voiced their opinions strongly. Never mentioning that, you know, the counter-protesters were outnumbered 2 million to 14 or anything like that. So this huge immigration rally that took place on May the 1st, Tyler Froatz II shows up. The rally was in Meridian Hill Park, and he goes over and starts a fight with one of the immigration rally organizers. Froatz bent the organizer's left arm and scratched her hand, and then fled the area to put on dark camouflage clothing. Cue the Rambo music. So police showed up and arrested Froatz, and they found he was carrying on him a hammer, a taser, a loaded flare gun, and two knives, including a 12-inch dagger-style knife. Then they searched his vehicle and found Froatz had brought with him to the immigration rally an M1 rifle and ammunition, a map of a local embassy, and a detailed hand-drawn sketch of the park with lines pointing toward the center of the protest. Then they searched his house. At the house, they found a wide variety of bladed weapons, 13 firearms, 2,000 rounds of ammunition. One of those was a fully loaded 12-gauge shotgun and a 45 caliber pistol. They also found an explosive that resembled a Molotov cocktail. It was in a Welch's grape juice bottle, wrapped with a T-shirt, and was a mix of gasoline and a jelly-like substance that would explode and stick to skin like napalm. Now, of course, the Froatt's 24 years old, was described by his friend Kristen Taylor as being non-threatening. Like a lot of people who feel strongly about the immigration issue, he was out protesting, Taylor said, who added Froatt's was not, this is, and see, this is what Mark Twain would have called the snapper. Taylor said, who added Froatt's was not working for Free Republic during his protest. He didn't say anything about killing illegals or nothing like that. So there you have it. Freepers in the wild. Freepers gone wild. Somehow it doesn't have the allure of those infomercials that run on Comedy Central at 3 o'clock in the morning. Freepers gone wild. I think George Bush is a genius. 3,000 rounds of ammunition, fully loaded 12-gauge shotgun, 45 caliber handgun, 13 bladed weapons, and a Molotov cocktail, a loaded M1 assault rifle in his vehicle, a loaded flare gun, two knives, including a 12-inch dagger, a taser. Yeah, this is the political party of peace. Again, you go through this entire story from the Examiner, and you don't find any reference to the fact that this guy was a homegrown terrorist. Now, if his name, however, had been Abdul, or Ahmed, or Muhammad, the word terrorist would have appeared in the story no less than a half a dozen times. But this is just another murderous right winger, so we can't call him a terrorist. He was a counter protester. Jesus, our good buddy Steady is calling in from the wilds of Rhode Island. Hey, Steady, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mom. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing good out here. I'm right beside the Dodge van here. The SENA Dodge van is the guys that all got their paychecks and raced into Walmart.
The Eagle flies on Thursday, is that it?
Yeah, and having left my home on February 24th, it feels really good to get a paycheck. I haven't been home yet, you know.
Yeah.
It does feel good, although I have an ID challenge. But and I was identifying with your rim challenge when trying to get a rim.
Oh my God! I had to get four because they're all rusted out.
Yeah,
You would have thought. I mean, to see what's on those things, Steady. You would have thought that I had had the truck sitting in some sort of an acid bath for a year or two.
Yeah, for $225 apiece, you could get some Koenig monsoons, man. Some 19-inch wheels or something. But I just wanted to call in, and I wish I was taking notes, but I'm actually just hanging out while the guys are doing all their shopping, and I want to touch base with the family out there in cyberspace and there at the physical studio. You blessed me to give me an outlet while I've been on the road, and just thank you for your network, and thank you, Agnes, and thank you all the listeners and people in the chat room. I love you. I can't wait to get it. I just did size up a laptop computer Toshiba for $649, so when I get my check cashed, I will be online. We have wireless at the house, so.
Hot diggity.
Yeah, I will pick up a computer, and I'll be online soon enough, but I can't pay 5%, you know, to...
Oh, that's what they charge to cash a check?
And if I had ID, I could do it. And I saw 5%, and I didn't even try with my paper ID. But I did the whole Katrina relief thing with that paper ID, and it got me the job and got me on the flight and got me everywhere I need to go. But I can't open up a bank account.
Well, what bank's it drawn on?
Wells Fargo.
Is there a Wells Fargo branch around there?
I haven't looked into that, actually, but, you know, the banks are kind of sticky, and I'm in and out.
But that thing, if that check is drawn on them, they got to honor it.
Okay, well, I'll look into that. I'll open up the phone book when I get home. But there's lots of goodwill here amongst the crew. We had a couple guys had to leave today for various reasons, but we're getting the wire in, and the ship's going to do its sea trials here within a couple weeks. They're going to
wow.
go to Delaware, and our job will continue in Delaware. They can't stay at the port that we're at. But I don't want to go too much into me other than just to say hi to everybody, and I love all of you. I miss you. I really do. And I talked to Arbor. I was so proud to say, I got a paycheck. So to all my friends out there, God bless you. Thank you for helping me do what I did. I couldn't have done it as well as I did without the Head On Radio Network and Bob and Agnes and Texas Betsy and Ray and even Sarge, man. You know, I hope he's doing okay out in Phoenix. I heard he's already out in Phoenix. So
yeah, he is.
All of you.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, Steady, you stay safe, and let us know. Give us a shout when you get a chance.
Yep, accident-free this far. I'm still working on the steering control unit for the Rolls-Royce situation. I'm Rolls-Royce steering gear. Quite a project for my first Marine job.
Oh, without a doubt.
Okay, my friend. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
All right, we'll see you, Steady.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And David calling in from Tennessee, whom we haven't heard from in a while. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Well, Bob, I just had to check in. It's such a special night. You are on as opposed to traveling, and I just thought, you know, this is the old swift kick where it matters most. That I'll phone on in, and then I'm lucky enough to hear Steady. Obviously, a happy guy about money in fist.
Yes. Well, or soon. As soon as they cash the check.
And that business of that cashing charge, if you don't pay attention and if you don't suss it out, man, that's a huge racket around here too. But I got a couple of things. I got an interesting Iraq deal I want to go over in a minute, but I want to backfill a bit for those of us in the listenership that might be wavering a little bit about the vigor with which our Bob just tears into religion. You know, if you guys, you know, here I am, I'm an old guy, and I started out, you know, your mother takes you to church, and there's Jesus, and there's the Easter Bunny, and there's God, and there's Santa Claus, and you're on board with the whole thing, and if you're 8 or 9 years old, it all starts to unravel. Between that mean bastard on the playground that kicks your butt about Santa Claus, and then deductive reasoning kicks in. And then you read a little history, and the next thing you know, there's about 500 religions around the world that have just as much validity as your invisible man in the sky. But wait a second. The world ain't catching on to that. Our invisible man is telling us to kill the guys that follow the other invisible man, and it just goes on and on and on. So I had an especially vivid 4 hours of television in the last couple of weeks. The Vatican, in it, I don't know why they would ever do this. It's kind of like Nixon releasing tapes. The Vatican, a few years ago, released something like the equivalent of 3,500 bound volumes of Inquisition records.
Holy cow.
Yeah, really, seriously, this was fascinating to me because, you know, my understanding of the Inquisition was 8th, 9th, 10th grade history.
Yeah, this is the Octagon Papers.
This is straight out of the bowels of Holy Mother Church, and this dramatization of the 400 glory years of the Inquisition, whether it be Italy, whether it be the... You know, the papal states in the middle of Italy before the whole thing became a country, or the Spanish Inquisition. It is horrifying because it's not somebody's speculation. It's not a parody. Although I love Monty Python.
Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition. Yep, can't say the phrase anymore without having to go there.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Once the Python brain worm is in there, it's going to say. These are the written records of what torture, for what reason, to what 11-year-old child or 18-year-old woman or somebody that dared to say through personal observation and study the sun doesn't go around the earth, whoop, burn him at the stake, And what really clicked in my head and what really came to me, like just a ton of bricks, the template for how the Inquisition worked is not a whisker different than the template the religious right and the neocons want to come together and unite civil law and religious doctrine to form a theocracy. We got to see how that works on Earth for 400 years of torture, burning, looting, killing, family dissolution. There's a very famous case where a 10-year-old boy, in a moment of sickness, his parents' maid baptized this Jewish boy. And later, she says it in casual conversation. The next thing you know, the Inquisition scoops the boy up, and this was in 1850 in Italy, scoops him up, takes him away from the family, and says, well, now that he's a Christian, we must raise him as such. Your son has to be taken away. And because it was the papal state in the middle of Italy, and they had the law, they had the soldiers, they had it all, boom, he goes away. Which reminded me a lot of deprogramming of homosexuals.
Yeah.
All of this stuff. And the modern industrial religious right-wing consortium, that, I mean, there's a couple extra steps. It's not like they are directly burning people at the stake, but hey, oh, our religion says condoms are evil. So all of you people over there in that country I can't pronounce, go ahead and die of AIDS, but God loves you. Repent before you go, would you? There's no difference, Bob. The template.
Oh, please remember, David, that when you say, well, you know, we're not burning anybody at the stake, not that I would correct you or anything, but you missed a key preposition there. Yet. We're not burning anybody at the stake yet. Because if you go and you study the doctrines and the hopes and dreams of the Christian Reconstructionist movement in the United States, you will find one of their leaders saying, we want to return to stoning because there are lots of rocks.
Oh, I know. And you've only got to put just a couple of extra steps into the process. Just a couple of extra steps. I preach hate against homosexuals from my pulpit. Oh, darn, some boys out west beat a homosexual to death while he was wired to a fence post. Oops. Well, if he'd have just gone for deprogramming and accepted Jesus Christ as personal Lord and Savior, this would have never happened. Pass the plate, would you, elders? So all of you that may, you know, it took me 25 or 30 years to go from, oh, yeah, I'm a Christian and I go to church, and step by step by step, all of that organized religion stuff proved to me that it was evil, that it was dangerous, that it was bloody, that it was illogical, and there is no reason to step away from revealing the ugly religion industry for what it is. So if any in the audience want to think, well, you know, Bob, well, gee whiz, you better back off a little bit. Please, Bob, don't back off. Just, you know, to use a phrase we should never, ever hear again, stay the course, would you?
Yeah. They got the little hairs standing up on the back of my neck with the stay the course thing. But, no, I understand. And, you know, I wish the subject wasn't there for me. I wish it wasn't as easy as it is. You know, with his tongue firmly planted in his cheek, our good friend Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com, in his RDA of Irony blast today, pointed out the fact that, well, this is just what he says, today's news summary, touring Latin America, Pope Benedict XVI exclaimed that, and you know, he's not making this stuff up. Eugene's genius is for turning things on its ear and pointing out the ridiculousness of things, but he always starts with an element of truth. So, touring Latin America, Pope Benedict XVI exclaimed that the pre-Columbian peoples had longed for Christianity even if they had not realized it. He did not elaborate, He did not elaborate, Eugene says, whether or not the conquistadores really made ideal missionaries. In their unique form of evangelism, the Portuguese, and especially the Spanish, did tend to confuse swords with crosses, rape with communication, and slavery with bingo. The pre-Columbian Americans might have unknowingly longed for Christianity, but if given the choice between the conquistadors or Pope John the 23rd, they gladly would have waited another 400 years.
Oh, that man. Oh, yeah. Put him on the Christmas card list.
Oh, without a doubt. I joyfully steal from Eugene on a regular basis.
Please do. What he wrote on the passing of that fat bastard from Virginia. Boy, that was sweet too. Jerry Falwell's first day here, there, and the other.
Cabana boy. Oh, Cabana boy.
Oh, you who?
Pope Jerome and St. Paul, St. Jerome and St. Paul sure seem awful friendly.
Oh, yes, sir. Lower and slower. I understand my mission is lost.
No. That's mission in eternity.
Oh, that is so precious. So, you know, when we have these little announcements thrown our way about faith-based initiatives, and God told me to do it, please hearken back to those 400 years of...
Well, that's why I said the other night, David, that if you think about it, because of the number of people involved, and when I say this, I include the fundamentalists in this country today as well, almost every single person in America, and absolutely beyond a shadow of a doubt, every single native person, indigenous to the Americas, has a direct genetic, genealogical connection to the rape, murder, pillage, and mayhem of Mother Church, committed by Mother Church.
Without doubt, it doesn't matter whether you are brown or yellow or red or black. There was biblical teachings to enable the lightest skinned among us to view them as no more than an offending animal.
Yeah, exactly. And so you know, I don't feel that, you know. Then they say, hey, you're a religious bigot. No, I'm getting some back. I'm gonna, you know, but you know, my people are largely Scots. And, you know, when they walked away and became whatever they were, Calvinists or, you know, mean-ass Presbyterians or whatever, there was heresy and apostasy and excommunication rained ex cathedra down upon them. Sure. Well, you know what? We got a little bit, for what little bit of time that we've got a little bit of freedom of speech, we had damned well better fight back and call evil when we see it. You have to name the demon before you can exorcise it, don't you, David?
I agree completely. Well, I wanted to do that little bit of backfill just to make sure that none of us lose our nerve, because, you know, it's fine to be it's fine to be spiritual. It's fine to want badly, as I do. I want badly for there to be more out there somewhere than just us. You know, you and I we're in the top third for thinking humans, I believe. And if you and I are in the top third, and this is our zenith, oh, Lordy. I want there to be something more out there than just what we can come up with, surely. Please.
And, you know, when we went... No, go ahead.
No, it's just... It ain't Jerry Falwell. It ain't Reverend Dobson. It isn't some poor guy that... having been offended for 1,500 years, how he's been treated by Europe, a Eurocentric dominated world, he's decided he wants to throw a few bombs, and he finds a verse or two or five words in the Quran to justify that. No, I don't want it to be him either, but I just hope there's something out there. But it's nothing I've seen so far.
No, and I mean, you know, our good friend John Fox of All Foxed Up, he of the Land Down Under, or, you know, I mean, who knows? The universe may be upside down. It may be the land up over, as far as we can tell. But he and I were talking a little bit about the Aboriginal peoples. And you know, I love. I couldn't even begin to discourse on what their basic belief system is, but I do know that, or have read that part of that their system is that what goes on in your dreams is actually the reality.
How sophisticated is that? Isn't that remarkable?
It is.
Isn't that more engaging and reaching out and invigorating and intriguing? Isn't that at the very least equal to?
It's every bit as good as a mistranslated young woman who is mistranslated into a virgin having a baby.
Thank you.
And the baby is baby God.
Thank you. And some guy somewhere in a church, like that fellow in North Carolina that wants to combine worship of the Republican Party with his version of Christianity, screaming and demanding acceptance of the fact that if it's written in the book, it's God's word. Parenthesis, never mind, it's been translated 7 times over 2,000 years. Actually 1,500 years, because most of that wasn't written at the time of Christ. Oh, no, it can't possibly have been screwed up and coming through that process.
No.
No, not at all.
Yeah, no matter how many times the real scholars point out the fact that, well, that wasn't in the original version, and this got changed for that, and because, again, as I mentioned the other night, a lot of this operates on Field's third law. Don't smarten up a chump.
Thank you. And that's exactly where I was headed, because you, that fellow that's the professor, divinity school, whatever he is, the misquoting Jesus.
Yeah, Dr. Ehrman.
He knows, he has said, you know, you have said, if you have even rudimentary training at a seminary, you have to leave there knowing. Man, I'm standing up here telling these people some real fairy tales. Now, what do I do with this? Do I drop the dime on God, or do I keep telling them this because I'd like to go Lexus shopping in 5 years?
You are so going to love that Lexus.
You're exactly right.
And the sun stood still, and the real value of pi is 3, because the Bible is the inerrant, infallible word of God. And I want a sunroof.
Exactly. And those dinosaurs, oh, yes. You know, the guy that built the boat, Noah, yeah, he rode around on those. That was just a head fake.
He brought eggs along, but the eggs cracked. And I want the hand-tooled Corinthian leather seats.
Thank you. Oh, well, anyway, that pretty much for me takes care of that. Let's talk a little bit about the surge.
Oh, the surge? Surge?
The surge in Iraq, the one that's going to win the war, the one that the chimp in charge is so proud of, the one that, General Petraeus is, Mr. Counterinsurgency, all that BS. Have you heard anything, or maybe you've mentioned it because I haven't been as good a listener as I should have been? No cookies at bedtime for me tonight.
No fruit cup.
What's that?
No fruit cup.
Oh, no fruit cup. Have you discussed the situation in a small Iraqi town, big town, small city, Armia? Is that topic?
No, I've read over that a couple of times, and I gotta confess a little bit of guilt here, David. I don't know how to talk about the Iraq war anymore. Well, I simply don't know how to talk about it.
This is not about the entire war, but it's about the manipulation. It's about the ginning up, a phrase you love and use so eloquently. This is what this administration is all about. This thing takes about 6 months to play out. It won't take me that long to go over it, but several months ago, this little town, this Tarmia, was picked out, somebody way up the line, because it's north and I believe east of Baghdad, which puts it close to Kurdish territory. So it was picked out as one of the towns that could respond to an overt, concentrated effort to turn it into a showplace. Now then, as the guys on the ground swatting sand fleas and wishing for a better situation in life, our troops love to call this, And there was roughly 150 of them at the time there. They all look at each other when the word comes down that there's going to be this massive effort put into Tarnia. They all look at each other and shrug and say, oh, okay, we're the next General's Petting Zoo. That's what the troops call them. General Petting Zoo.
Really?
You put extra American troops in. You bring in a dedicated officer that really thinks he can reshape the entire Middle East if he only shoots enough people, prays long enough, and gets the right photo op at the right time. So extra troops come in. So in a town of 30,000 people in Iraq, you got 300 American troops, and this young officer comes in, and his job is to pull together and in short order train as many Iraqis into being sharp, really dedicated, functioning police people so that they can guard the town and the Americans can go away and go do something else. All right?
Mm-hmm.
This guy pulls together 300 Iraqis to sign up. You know, it's a gutsy move because, you know, just signing up can get you killed if you're an Iraqi. So he trains these guys up, and sure enough, with extra American troops and 300 armed Iraqis knocking around this town of 30,000, nothing bad happens. Nothing bad happens the day after that. Nothing bad happens the day after that. Oh, look here. Here come the administration's minions, generals, and enough cameras to re-photograph Gone with the Wind. Bang. Fox News gets their good news tonight from Iraq story.
The good news happening in Iraq.
Take, for instance, the town of Tarnia. Blah, 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 happiness, blah, blah, accomplishment, blah, blah, progress, blah, 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 blah. All right. So, photo op over. Things settle down. The troops migrate out. The young officer goes on to do the same thing in another town because mission accomplished in a very small way. All right, now then, we're down to 150 American troops. And they notice occasionally there's a missing Iraqi that's been trained. Well, you know, that's going to happen. The American brigade goes down to 50 troops. We're still in a town of 30,000 people. Now there are 50 American troops. The equipment has gone somewhere else. Where's it gone? Oh, it's part of the surge to turn Baghdad into the Mall of America.
And now it's part of a new petting zoo.
And they're recreating the ultimate petting zoo, the safe Iraq, that everybody can point to and say, look, inside the green zone, not even the mortars are getting in. And around Iraq this, and around Baghdad this.
Frisbees and wheat checks for everyone.
Everyone. Well, one morning, the commander of the Iraqi recently trained police says, we're going on maneuvers to the highest ranking American. And he goes, well, wait a second. You've got all of you, and you've got all of your equipment. And he says, yep, we're going on patrol. We'll see you later. Boom. 300 trained Iraqis with gear, AKs, ammunition, light machine guns, a few Bradleys, maybe Humvee, they're gone. They don't come back. They disappear. Oops.
And, you know, 50 against 30,000, that would make you really, really nervous, wouldn't it?
And the American troops get on the horn, not yours, but their communications. Hey, what's with this? Who's coming? Nope. Reinforcements. Not today. You boys are on your own. We'll once we clean up this, that, and the other, we'll put you on the list to reinforce your position. Within the last 3 weeks, they have not been able to leave the smallest possible area they've ever occupied. They've already lost 4 to sniper fire. They're not even sure helicopters can get into Tarnia, and there is no scheduled reinforcement.
This is, you know, everybody. I remember back when they started the war, David, and we would say things like, "Well, you know, we had hoped we'd learned the lessons of Vietnam and the neocons and the Republicans and the Bush and the Bushlickers and." That all the weirdos and the Falwellians and so, well, UK, this is not going to be another Vietnam. You know what? We were wrong and they were right. This is not another Vietnam.
You know,
this is worse than Vietnam.
It is worse than Vietnam because Vietnam was a small, deprived little country that the Chinese for 1,500 years had referred to that in whatever Chinese dialect was concurrent with the rulers of the country at that time. That was China's rice bowl with a possessive. That is our rice bowl. That's what Vietnam was. There's mm-hmm. no great wealth of natural resources. Nobody goes through Vietnam to get anywhere else. And it's a very epicenter of the oil supply for the world and strategically one of the most important areas. It's crossroads of the world when you're going to do things that involve anything other than North and South America. And we're making a mess out of that. And it's a bigger mess. And it's more complicated. It is more complicated and shows less sign of resolution than anything. So if at some point in time these presentations by the echo chamber of the right about good news in Iraq, I want all of us to think back about Tarmia. When we're told about there is good news, the good news is temporary, and it's fleeting, and it's bought with lives that should have never been wasted, and it's a lie. It is a big lie.
It is. I can't imagine what it must feel like to have night come in Tarmia.
I don't even want to think about it. And this writer that exposed the story called all kinds of hell, and it's definitely under the radar. And it's small potatoes. It's 50 miles from Baghdad. It's 50 of our troops. It's all of these things that let it be neglected, but the process surrounding it. And the process has been done before, it's being done now, and it's going to be ballyhooed by somebody even more as they go forward with more of this crap where they play the shell game of pull troops from here to make a splash over there, and when you walk away from it, it's like Charlemagne telling the tide not to come in.
Well, I want to share a quote with you, David, if I may.
I'm listening.
This is from March of 2003. It's from an op-ed in the Los Angeles Times. If, as seems probable, the effort encounters greater resistance than its architects imagine, our way of life may find itself tested in ways that will make the Vietnam War look like a mere blip in American history. Those words were written by a man whose last name is Basevich.
Oh,
Andrew Basevich. He is a graduate of West Point. He has been a professor at West Point, a professor at Johns Hopkins, a professor at Boston University,
where he is to this day.
Correct.
And he is by the military, the honest military, the military that is not sacrificing any and everything around them for another star or two, one of the two or three most respected commentators by the real, honest, working military. He is as respected as any American writing about any military political situation.
Well, they got a visit, the Basaviches did, on Mother's Day. His son, Andrew Basevich, first lieutenant, was blown away in the war that his father knew was a blunder. And this is the sick part. The younger Basevich had been stuck in Iraq since October without being rotated home. How many months is that?
Well, that would be...
That's 9 months. 9 months. And, you know, another thing that the elder Basevich wrote, our reckless flirtation with preventative war qualifies as not only wrong but also stupid. Indeed, the Bush Doctrine poses a greater danger to the United States than do the perils it supposedly guards against. We urgently need to abrogate that doctrine in favor of principles that reflect our true interests and our professed moral values.
Is that from the same 2003?
No. This is from March 1st in the Boston Globe.
Got it.
That was written while his son was there. I wonder if anyone, any of these sick right-wingers would dare look at Mr. Basevich and say, why don't you support the troops? Because when they say that, when they say that to people who want to bring the troops home, you're not supporting the troops. They're saying that to people like Mr. Basevich.
That's exactly right.
And it just tears through you. I don't know if you saw this or not, but some right wing editorial cartoonist drew a cartoon that made the papers the other day of an American soldier all buff and bulked up, and he had his patch on with the American flag, and it said Iraq over it. And there was a big kitchen chef's knife sticking out of his back, dripping blood with the word Congress written on it. Now, this ran in newspapers all around the country, David.
Oh, that is so disgusting.
And the most interesting
thing...
The most interesting part of this, though, is that, what's the old George Santayana thing? Those who know history, who do not learn history, are doomed to repeat it. Well, those who do know history are trying not to, so a few people in the blogosphere immediately connected that to a 1924 German cartoon that showed a big dagger sticking in the back of a German First World War soldier laying on the ground, and pointed out that the Republicans, they're just recycling old ideas like they always do. And the right-wing bloggers had, we didn't know nothing about I don't see no connection.
Just like that pathetic caller that you used to have on terrestrial radio that one night, I think it may have been during that short period of time you had the three-way thing going, and the poor, ignorant little boob blurted out, I don't know anything about no Iran-Contra. What's that got to do with anything? That was too long ago to matter.
Yeah.
I think that's what we're dealing with here.
Well, I don't care how long ago it was. It matters, doesn't it?
It matters. It reveals the process of that party. It reveals their depravity. It reveals the depth they'll go to create power, based on smoke and mirrors. It reveals how skilled they are at just lying their way into attaching themselves to an office like a leech or a lamprey, and then smiling about doing it.
Yeah, it's the smile.
Oh yeah, yeah. They're skilled presenters, all right.
Jesus. Well, thanks for the nice little wander through all of this. I really appreciate it, David.
You betcha.
We will talk soon.
Oh well, of course.
All right, take care.
You too.
Bye now. All right, we're coming up on the top of the hour. When we come back, more of your phone calls as you wish. The phone number you already know, 877-443-2366. That's toll-free if you need us to carry the freight. If you can run on your own nickel, 304-658-5453. In honor of this week's posting over at Billy Shear's blog at unreportednews.net. We'll bump out with the most well-known riff in all of electric guitar rock and roll history. You're listening to America's liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Make records with This is the Quality News Network. A bipartisan agreement has been reached on the issue of U.S. immigration. In an announcement today, senators on both sides said the deal will offer quick legal status to the millions of illegal immigrants currently in the U.S. It'll also create a guest worker program and increase border security. President Bush said the proposal is a much-needed solution to the problem. Differences still need to be resolved between the Senate and House before a bill goes before the president. The Census Bureau reports that the minority population in the U.S. is more than 100 million, or about a third of the entire population. Hispanics make up the largest and fastest-growing minority group. Four states now have minorities that are actually the majority. Senate leaders met with the White House Chief of Staff today on Capitol Hill to discuss the Iraq War funding bill. President Bush vetoed the first spending bill because it contained a timetable for U.S. troop withdrawal from Iraq. A British think tank, meanwhile, has published a 12-page report which says the Iraqi government is unable to control vast areas of the country, which is on the verge of collapse. The Chatham House report also indicates that there are several civil wars going on in Iraq, and the U.S. security crackdown has failed to cut down the overall violence across that country. Two Democratic senators are seeking a no-confidence vote on Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. That, while Republican Senator Arlen Specter, the top Republican on the Senate Judiciary Committee, predicted today that Gonzalez would resign. World Bank President Paul Wolfowitz has also been under fire for weeks about a pay raise that he arranged for his girlfriend in 2005 when he took on the job. There are reports he's negotiating an agreement to resign his post. However, he wants to be cleared of any wrongdoing before he quits. And newly sworn-in French President Nicolas Sarkozy announced his selection for prime minister today. He appointed François Fillon to the post, someone to aid in the introduction of his reform programs. In Britain today, the Labour Party confirmed that Gordon Brown has become the sole candidate to take over the party's leadership and succeed current Prime Minister Tony Blair when he leaves office at the end of June. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news coming up next.
Hi, I'm George Lopez. In comedy, there are some things you can count on to get a smile. In healthcare, Shriners Hospitals for Children have a proud tradition of bringing smiles to kids with orthopedic burn and spinal cord problems. The Shriners offer world-class medical care to children absolutely without charge. At all 22 Shriners Hospitals, innovative research and teaching programs are combined with specialized pediatric services for one purpose, to improve the lives of children. For more information, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, having fun and helping kids.
There was this man who almost learned to walk at a rehab center that almost got built by people who almost gave. Almost gave. How good is almost giving? About as good as almost walking. As generous a nation as we are, sometimes instead of giving, we almost give. Don't almost give. Give. Visit our website at don'talmostgive.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Defense Department scientists have discovered that low-level exposure to sarin gas can cause permanent brain damage. That's according to a New York Times report. Many U.S. troops came into contact with the poisonous gas during the first Gulf War. The medical finding may serve as an explanation for what is called the Gulf War syndrome, suffered by thousands of veterans. And marine biologists unsuccessfully tried to use whale song to lure an injured humpback whale and her calf out of the Sacramento Shipping Channel and back out to the open water of the Pacific Ocean. Both the animals appear to be hurt by a boat's propeller. Researchers say the whales are the farthest inland ever traveled. And scientists at Pennsylvania's School of Medicine say they found a way to make mice regrow hair follicles, which could possibly lead to treatments for baldness in humans. The study in the journal Nature says researchers found that wounded skin caused skin cells to take on the same properties of stem cells that generate working hair follicles. The company Follica hopes to market a treatment for humans in the next few years. And restaurant chain Applebee's announced it's no longer using trans fats oil in its restaurants in the U.S. The chain has 1,800 outlets across the country. And light sweet crude is trading at $65.92 a barrel. The Dow closed down 11 points. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Five past, and we're back. A couple of notes. If I get the new used rims put on the truck in enough time tomorrow, I will head out. I've got to get this trip done, and I hate missing the show. I hate being away from the show. I hate being away from my darling wife and my lovely children. But this is a task that was assigned to me out of trust and love by my father, and I must honor that. Tune in tomorrow and see. I'm not trying to be inconsistent or iffy or anything. It just remains to be seen, and that's all I can say. The other thing, I had a heck of a good time this afternoon. The folks over at Quality News Network invited me to join Tony Seaton for a conversation on his daily program, America Back on Track. Now, it airs, if I'm doing the math right, from noon to 1 Pacific time, which would be 3 to 4 Eastern. If I got that right, somebody correct me if I don't. I don't do math on the fly. So, yeah, I think I've got that right. But anyway, the show airs every day live, and Tony has graciously... It's a wonderful program. Tony has graciously offered to let us carry the program in delay on the horn. And so that will be added to the lineup. And I hope you will enjoy it. Tony's got a ton of experience. He really, really knows what he's doing when it comes to radio journalism and radio media. He's far more a journalist than I will ever be. So I hope you'll... I hope you will check the horn schedule, the horn lineup, to find out when you can hear America Back on Track every day, and enjoy it as much as I enjoyed my time in conversation with Tony Seaton. So, yeah, have a look. All right, then, let's go back to the phones. We're joined by our good friend David from Maine. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. I have a little bit of a story or news for you that you might not have caught.
Okay.
It appears that Rush Limbaugh and Bill Clinton met in a restaurant last night.
I was out today, and because it's the only thing in the way of radio you can get, and so I heard a little bit of the Flush program, and it made my brain squirm.
If this is true, I'm wondering why the heck Bill Clinton went over to Rush's table in the first place, if it's true. That's if, because then Rush said, well, and then he started to chat my girl. Well, that does sound like Bill Clinton.
Did you see, I only caught snippets. Did you hear the thing, David?
Yeah, I read the transcript. I mean, it's on his site. Those people are so shameless. You can read the transcript, and they said, audio clips will cost extra. And I'm like, give me a break. Audio clips will cost extra. I mean, if people are really interested, they would just, clip it together themselves.
Sure.
Obviously, these people aren't thinking.
Well, people were calling in and said, mega dittos to you, Rush. You're such a decent person. Yeah. You didn't refuse to shake that scoundrel's hand like you should have. Oh, it was sick.
I mean, and see, this goes into what I was saying before, was that if Bill Clinton opened up a suitcase and gave more money than Republicans, you can bet that Mr. Rush would start fielding and protecting Mr. Clinton.
Oh, well,
that's the amount,
Yeah, it depends on the amount.
Yeah, it depends on the amount, because that's what it is. And, and I think a lot of people get caught up in the theatrics. Like you say, it's wrestling. And I've never really been a supporter of Bill Clinton. I think going after him personally, if you go after him personally a bit too much, I think that that's a... It's pointless, because...
The thing out of all of this, David,
yeah,
is that we don't know what the situation really was.
Oh, that's right. We don't. And you know Bill's not going to say anything.
No, but if you know, I mean, you know what a good old boy Bill is, and see, Rush is such a bubble boy himself, so outside of any of the culture or anything. He might not have known what was going on if Bill walked over to him and said, "Rush Limbaugh, you big old son of a bitch, how you doing, boy?" You know what I mean?
Rush didn't come from a rich family, did he?
Oh yeah,
he did.
I mean, we're not talking, you know, we're not talking Bush rich or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But his father was a lawyer and owned a radio station, and his grandfather was a lawyer, some sort of company man, and passed down wealth, and they were quite well off down there in the sleepy little hamlet in the boot heel of Missouri that is Cape Girardeau.
Well, the one thing I found interesting about the whole Rush Limbaugh thing was he said afterwards he had dinner, and I was like, oh wait, there's more. He went out to go walk over to him and say a few words to him.
Well, but see, the way this thing sets up is it's important, the dynamic as it was described.
Right.
It has Bill Clinton coming to Rush and Rush sitting there. Oh, my friends, I wouldn't have known. I had my ear cocked over so I could hear, and I wouldn't have known, and so I wasn't looking in his direction. I would have never known Bill Clinton was in the same restaurant with me.
I have a feeling that Rush had a consultant call up and say, Bill Clinton's over at the Kobe's right now.
Yeah.
Get your ass on over here. That's what I really think happened. Because it just doesn't click in my mind that Bill Clinton would actually, you know, and Rush was saying, there are no such thing as coincidence with the Clintons. He was saying that that Clinton and Ron Burkle intended to meet him there.
Oh my God! So you read the transcript? I heard at some point this part about how, what was it? I want to make sure I get it right. He goes on and you know, I hear people say that there's a lack of civility, and they don't understand. Yeah, and the lack of civility. And sitting there and saying that like butter wouldn't melt in his mouth, and he wouldn't say poop if he had a mouthful of it. That, you know, the absence of civility in our political discourse today can be traced right back to him. Feminazis, tree huggers. All the racial bigotry, the constant harping on Ted Kennedy over Chappaquiddick that happened, you know, either 30 or 100 years ago. I can't remember which.
Right. See, he thinks that words are just words in the bigger picture of things with people and, you know, hurt some feelings or whatever. But, I mean, again, it's not just words when you have millions and millions and millions and millions of listeners when nobody holds you accountable for years and years.
And when those listeners act on those words.
Yeah, when those listeners act out on it. Like what you were saying with the Free Republic guy. Oh, alleged Free Republic guy.
Yeah.
That's radical as they come right there.
Yeah.
And I missed part of it. Did he get away with it, or... Or did he actually injure anyone or anything like that?
Well, no. He was being held in jail pending a hearing today, David.
Mm.
And I haven't found what came of the hearing. So, I mean, he injured somebody. Yeah, he went up and physically attacked one of the rally organizers, this Tyler Froatz II. And at the time he did so, or after he did so, he bent the person's arm backwards and scratched the person. I'm guessing since he's a freeper, it was probably a woman that he assaulted. It doesn't say here. It does. Yeah. Froatz bent the organizer's left arm and scratched her hand before leaving the area to don dark camouflage clothing. Her hand. This, of course, is another one of those big, tough right-wingers who likes to whoop ass on women.
Speaking of right-wing protests, I have another one for you, Bob. Melanie Morgan put together a protest for Harry Reid's office.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
And someone brought an actual monkey out there, because you get it, surrender monkey.
Mm-hmm.
And they had five people out there.
They're so clever.
But I think less than that, maybe four people. I was looking at the pictures, and I was like, you really can't do anything with these pictures. I mean, it just looks so sad. all had white flags.
Jesus.
I mean, it's just so stupid.
And again, it's stupid and mean-spirited. You know, I don't have the psychological background or training or wherewithal to do competent analysis on this, so I can only guess from my gut. But David, I get the sense that we can't have civil discourse about Iraq, because if you start having meaningful civil discourse about the Iraq war, then the right wingers have to dry up and go away because they have an indefensible position.
It destroys. See, the thing with the right wing, and it's been like this for maybe 3 or 4 decades, I would think, is that nobody's informed what they're talking about. There was a time when people would open the books and say, aha, this position and that position. I mean, they don't know anything about the cultures. They don't even know who they're fighting.
No.
So when you look at a situation like that, and you say, this is the enemy, and that's... I mean, they don't understand. See, if I was in the propaganda business, and I made bumper stickers or something, one of my bumper stickers would be, congratulations, Republicans, you made Osama a rock star. That would be one of mine, because technically they did.
Sure.
They made him into the biggest thing.
And you gotta do some time travel for that, too, David. You've got to go back to the Reagan administration.
Oh, right, right.
When American tax dollars, as part of the CIA budget, were funneling millions to the Mujahideen. And, of course, originally Al-Qaeda, which means the base, as you know, developed as a database of wounded Afghan war veterans that bin Laden was using his money to support, sort of like a little one-man VA.
They just use who they can, and they don't care what their background is.
And then when Bush War One started, and we put American soldiers on sacred, holy Saudi sand, Osama took his little one-man VA and turned it allegedly into an organization designed to wage war to get the infidels out of Saudi. I mean, that's a little oversimplification, but it's true.
It is true, and bin Laden put his money where his mouth is, and if you go back to the interviews, go back to 98, 99, he spelled out what he wanted to do, and the right-wingers are so ignorant, you could give them the quotes, and they'd be like, well, I don't know if I believe that.
Because everything they do is faith-based.
Right, everything is faith-based, and it has to do with cultural superiority, because if you take, this is how it's insecure it is, and this goes into another thing where, you know, they need to visit Mr. Therapist, because if you take one if you take one little tiny thing away, instantly, Bob, what happens? You get, well, I don't know why you hate America. I don't know why.
Well, it's, I mean, look at the little smear fest that took place in the 10 Little Idiots debate from what, Wednesday night or Tuesday night.
Oh, I mean, look what they did to Ron Paul.
Precisely, you know, and they it was shameless. You know, Ron
and
Paul
they clapped.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because that was the faithful there. I mean, it was South Carolina. South Carolina's been weird and bizarre. For a long, long time. You got to remember that the first rumblings of secession out of South Carolina came during the Jackson administration. And Andrew Jackson publicly stated that he would get on his horse, ride to South Carolina, and hang the, and these are his words, I do believe, hang the first secessionist bastard I find, and hang him and keep hanging him until there's no secessionist left. And the South Carolinians all of a sudden got all quiet because they knew he would, by God, do it.
Have you seen that YouTube clip where they show Fox News and they show Hannity? And it's so clever. They take Ron Paul, even though he's rated number one in the polls for the debate,
yeah,
that night, and they move it so it looks like it's not number one. And when he's talking to Mitt Romney, he kind of mutters, and Ron Paul is number one. You could see Mitt Romney.
Oh, I saw the look on his face, and it was precious.
Yeah.
But what a sleaze job it was. Now let's not make any mistake or think that I'm going to get all squishy about Ron Paul, because I'm not.
I'm not either. I mean,
Ron Paul is bizarre. All right.
Oh, his policy on abortion just, you know, totally takes the cake.
But, you know, libertarian politics is just bizarre by itself. And he was a libertarian member of Congress for a while, and
that
then
is the real compassionate conservative.
Yeah, I've got compassion for conservatives, exactly.
Right.
But you know, I'm not all busted up about him, but he was honest about it, and it is, you know, how can you not say that 9/11 happened in part as a result of things that we have done in the world? If you know any history, you have to say that, David. And so Ron Paul pointed that out, and Rudy Giuliani did everything but ask him why he hates America.
And see, that's the problem. And did you see what happened with the only good thing that I'll say about McCain, Bob, the only good thing that I've seen McCain happen all year during this whole campaign is when he said, I'm not really for torture, and he got into why he wasn't in the torture. And look at the response he got. Nothing.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing with that crowd. Nothing.
Well, these were real, live, honest-to-God Republican weirdos who went to that thing. I mean, you can't take anything away from it on a substantive basis based on their responses. On the other hand, what's the CBS News poll out today say? Bush is down to 24%.
I mean, let's be honest. The people who say they support Bush, the only reason they're saying that, and when we know why, is because they don't want to be seen as liberal.
And they also David. They also have an emotional investment.
Oh yeah, it's an emotional investment. It's a matter of pride. I understand that.
I voted for him. I wasn't wrong. You people just hate Bush. It's not all Bush's fault. Blah 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 blah.
Right, and then they go back on. They support the military, or the classic. There's a great clip. I don't know. I don't think I sent it to you, but Robert Greenwald is testifying in front of the Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And he's testifying with Congressman Kingston. And Kingston asks him, he goes, Mr. Greenwald, how much money do you make from these movies? He asked him that, and then Greenwald said, well, I think you'd be surprised, Congressman. I don't make a penny from these movies. And he goes, and I really like to get back to the issue. He was there. I mean, I got to give it up to Robert Greenwald. He was there to put the war profiteering issue right in his face, and he says, it's a great clip, and he says, I want to tell you that I'm here because of the issues of what war profiteering is doing to this country, and in this conflict that we face in Iraq. And he goes, and I just don't see anyone here, it's getting through to them. And he says, and that's why I make movies like this, to bring issues to the center. And then Kingston fell back on, well, I don't know about that, because when I talk to the troops, and Greenwald did something smart, and this is what I think people should do. Don't let people say that. When they say, well, you know what, next time I would like to go with you to talk to those troops.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way you have to be. Make them be on the defense, always.
Well,
That's something I've
preached so long and so hard, David, is that you know so much of this Republican base is Southern in nature. I'm a Southerner, and I know how you have to respond to a bully.
Right.
You really do have to ball your fist up and bloody the bully's nose, and he will run away crying, and he'll quit. And if we as progressives and liberals will just agree to disagree on other issues, but, you know, put a few of them at the forefront and stand up and just be brutal and go on the offensive and hammer these people and hammer them until there's nothing left in them and they don't dare raise their stupid rhetoric anymore, maybe we can get some work done.
With aggressive, violent civility.
Yeah, I hate the word violence, but yeah.
No, it's, you know, play like compassion.
Yeah, violence. Oh, okay, sure. Yeah, violent civility.
That's what we need to do right there.
It is, and it's invigorating when you do see it happen. In a way, I would love to find out what the other side of this story about Clinton going over. Hey, Flush, you old son of a bitch. Yeah, I'd love to know what that was.
I know, but you know, it's like what Hartman was saying about why are we wasting our time. He was on the radio today. He was on fire. He was like, he was in front of a Colorado audience. He says, why are we wasting our time on legal fees for Ann Coulter because she didn't vote in the right district? He goes, you have other cases you have to attend to. He goes, and this is why progressives need to be more anchored.
Yeah, we've got stuff that really matters. I don't give a rat's ass about Paris Hilton going to jail,
right?
Or not going to jail. There are rules in this country. There are laws in this country. If people say it's okay to abrogate those, look, it's a DUI issue. I don't think DUI is a criminal law issue. I think it's a rehab issue.
See, the way I look at it is, it's okay to chit chat, but when you pull out your pocketbook and you invest in this crap,
yeah,
you're defeating the purpose.
Yeah. I mean, from a constitutional standpoint, if we go another year, every day that we go, David, that we have not fixed once and for all the issue of habeas corpus is another day it becomes more likely that we'll get it fixed. The same thing applies to illegal wiretapping, illegal domestic spying, all of that crap. It has to be job one. The Iraq war has to be job one. And all those things that tie together and become, and we'll agree that we're going to fix everything, but we have to have a list of priorities, and maybe the baby whales aren't number one.
And on that note, I only have one wish. I hope that Gore isn't just playing with everybody, and he really does decide to run, because it looks like he's going to be the only one that I'm going to have any types of interest in, since I don't think Barack is ready for prime time yet.
No.
You know how I feel about Hillary.
And Edwards.
Edwards, you know, Edwards' problem is the same kind of thing with, like, Kerry. He's sort of really passive with the comments due to his hair and all of that. And whenever they make comments on him, he doesn't really comment back. And I think, you know, they're gonna pin him down to the ambulance chaser again, and
yeah,
all of that crap. And I just think, you know, if Gore's serious, and he says it's looking like he's not going to back out at least in the few months, and I hope nobody gets to him during that time, and he realizes that, hey, you're at a crucial pivotal time, and you can do.
Well, you know, this Time interview that he gave, you know, he says he hasn't ruled out a presidential bid.
Right.
But the other quote is that he has fallen out of love with politics.
Ooh.
But, you know, maybe that's the kind of person we need in the White House.
Yeah, I think people have to understand that when I listen to people on the air, when they talk about democracy and stuff like that, realize that right now we're in a corporate environment. It's a corporate, like, secret society in Washington, and we need to take with what we have right now and invest with that and work with it. And I understand people say, well, I didn't want that. I mean, you can put your dream candidates, people. You can put them all in a room together in Washington, and guess what? It's going to fall apart in a few years, if by chance, and then you have to rethink your strategy the same way we're thinking now. So it's just that kind of time that we're dealing with.
And there's a certain amount of cynicism involved with that, David, because,
right,
you know, you and I, you know, we're Bill Hicks fans, right?
Right.
You remember the part where he says he's figured out how the presidency works? You run for president, and then when you win the presidency, the really scary guys take you in the back room, and they turn the lights out, and this movie starts showing.
Yeah.
And he said, and you're sitting there watching it, and you realize it's the Kennedy assassination, but it's from a camera angle you've never seen before. And the lights come on, and they look at you, and they say, you got it? And you go, got it. Where's my agenda?
You know, we helped instill this paranoid culture, every single one of us, people. We helped build these people up. We helped every product we buy, everything that we invested in, and this is what we have, and this is what we have to work with, and that's the bottom line, man.
Yeah, it is. It really is. I don't... I don't... I don't I, You know, I think I'd like to have a guy in the White House who isn't in love with politics.
I'd
like to have a guy in the White House who doesn't give a rat's ass about politics. Turning back to what you brought into the conversation to begin with, this business with Flush and Bill. Part of it, Flush used as an excuse to go off in praise of George W. You know, he's got nothing left to praise him for, except he says, you know, people became so angry when George W. hosted the unveiling of the Clinton portraits, and they said, how could he say such, and he was so decent and so kind talking about those people, talking about the Clintons.
Yeah.
And people got conservatives became so angry, and I think it's because of the profound respect. You know, because he said glowing, gorgeous words. He made a beautiful speech, George W. did, and I think it's because of the profound respect that he has for the office of the presidency. And, you know, if you vomit out a moving car window, it sprays down the backside of your automobile, so it was really tough for me. I had to pull over pretty quick. But yeah, George W. Bush has an appreciation for the splendor of the office. The office isn't supposed to have any damn splendor, David.
It's not.
It's a job.
Again, we inspired somebody like half of this country, more than half of this country, inspired somebody like George to come along and take this office because, you know, that was the constant in the mindset that the Reaganites and the people and the corporate mentality that put it into play. And we have to look at that and realize, okay, now that that's happened, what can we learn from that and what have we lost and take it from there?
Yeah. All right. I'll tell you what, David, I've really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you very, very kindly for everything you brought to the table. You never cease to amaze.
No problem, Bob.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
Later.
Bye. All right, quick break. Let's go and find out what's happening in the world of labor news from our good friends at laborradio.org. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Hey, ring him up if you want to. Let's have a nice babble tonight. We'll be back.
A form of suicide. Republicans
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. As the U.S. Senate worked on Wednesday to iron out the details of immigration reform, organized labor remains opposed to a guest worker program for undocumented immigrants. The AFL-CIO believes such programs exploit immigrant workers and can act to depress wages and working conditions for other workers. Labor supports reform that includes a path to citizenship. And while individual unions differ in their approaches to immigration, they're nearly all in agreement that guest worker programs amount to second-class status for workers. The SEIU, for example, supports a path to citizenship, but is against a new guest worker program. Following a growing trend, the Tommy Hilfiger company has fired high-paid workers and replaced them with lower-paid workers. Jesse Russell reports.
On Tuesday, janitors contracted to clean the offices for Tommy Hilfiger Company found that they had been fired and replaced. The workers, who make on average $19 per hour, were let go by the Hilfiger Company in exchange for a contractor who pays employees $8 per hour for the same work. The Hilfiger Company was acquired by private equity firm Apax Partners last year for $1.54 billion. Tommy Hilfiger will make $14.5 million a year until 2010 off of the deal, on top of his share of the company worth $66 million. Apax purchased the brand as it was on the decline and losing favor as a popular brand. The firing of the higher-paid workers in exchange for cheaper workers echoes a similar decision by Circuit City last month when the electronics retailer fired the top-earning 9% of their workforce in exchange for lower-paid new hires. Additionally, the move by Hilfiger as controlled by a private equity firm reflects concerns expressed by workers at Chrysler, a company that announced this week that it would be sold to private equity firm Cerebus.
The No Vacation Nation. That's the reputation the U.S. has in a world where nearly all rich industrialized countries guarantee workers paid vacation time. According to the Center for Economic Policy and Research, 28 million U.S. workers, or one in four, don't get any paid vacation time. European workers get a legally mandated minimum of at least 20 paid vacation days a year. On top of that, most rich countries provide between 5 and 13 paid official holidays by law for their workers. The U.S. is the only advanced economy that does not guarantee any paid vacations for workers.
Here is today's economic report. Who in the world whines most on the job? The French. A new study from FDS Research Group found that French workers complain the most about their jobs, followed by Britain, Sweden, and the United States. Countries found to have the lowest level of whining are the Netherlands, Thailand, and Ireland. The study found that despite a higher on average income level, more workers in the United States have issues with pay than workers in Thailand. The real wage level of U.S. workers is 8 times that of Thai workers.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Build another bar, drop it on someone, do it in the name of God. Kill your unknown brother, your sister and your mother, do it in the name of God. See that they are all wrong, if it makes you feel strong, do it in the name of God.
Oh, wow. 22 minutes before the hour. We're more than halfway through this Thursday night edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. And on the phone with us now, the working man's thinking man, Joe Vecchio.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, how you doing, Joe?
I'm pretty good. I'm sitting here on an air mattress on the floor with my computer monitor on a milk carton. And the computer on the floor and the mouse here on the bed.
So your computer monitor's gone missing and it's showed up on milk cartons around the Chicago area?
That's basically it, yeah.
Okay.
we suspect it was kidnapped by terrorists.
Yes.
But we're not really sure about that. So, I was going to call in the other night when you were talking about Mr. Falwell, but my throat was all messed up and I really couldn't speak very well. But I did want to bring up a point about that if I could.
Oh, do please.
Because I mentioned that on my blog. Actually, I didn't really mention anything about it. I just put up, Jerry Falwell, 1934 to 2007. And I did a little YouTube clip of a Rowan Atkinson skit where he's the devil welcoming people into hell. And the last line is, and finally, Christians, would you come over here, please? I'm sorry, the Jews were right.
Yeah.
So.
Is that the same skit where he says, "Oh, and for all of you who are wondering which one was the right religion, Mormons." Yes.
No, that's not it. But this, he's just basically he's separating everybody. And one, he just comes up and says, "The French, are you here? Would you kindly step here next to the Germans? Thank you very much. I'm sure you have a lot to talk about." one of my commentators. A guy by the name of Plymouth Belvedere, which is not his real name, but I love the nickname that he uses. He's a conservative type, and he was talking about, he was a good Christian and all that.
Phooey.
Jerry Falwell. So, pray for his soul. And I'm like, and I didn't say anything as of yet. And what I was thinking of when he wrote that was a discussion that my wife and I had several years ago when we were watching an episode of MASH. And my wife was very religious and very Christian, you got to understand. And she talked about how she was not happy that Hawkeye and Trapper John occasionally made fun of Frank Burns' religion. You know, and I said, well, they're not making fun of Frank's religion. They're making fun of the fact that he's a hypocrite. You notice they never just, you know, they never say anything like that to Father Mulcahy, who was, you know, at least honest in his beliefs, whether you defend Catholicism or not.
Right.
You know, I mean, I would rather everybody were like Father Mulcahy, to be perfectly honest. Or at least if the religious people, all of them were like that,
right,
instead of the Frank Burns. But unfortunately, we have Frank Burns making billions of dollars on television and on radio, and we have Frank Burns running the country right now. I keep waiting for George Bush to come out and start screaming about, you know, fluoridization in the water and how it's draining our natural fluids.
Oh, you know, don't taunt Agnes. The next thing you know, we'll be hearing those sound bites. I can no longer permit communist infiltration, communist conspiracies to sap me of my precious bodily fluids. That's what we need, Jack. A little cold water on the back of the neck and the curb.
Excuse me.
That's quite all right. But, you know, no, I saw a lot of that, you know, well, he's gone, don't speak ill of the dead. Horse crap. You know, does that rule apply to Genghis Khan? Don't speak ill of the dead.
My argument, you know, Falwell's gone, good riddance to bad garbage, and the only problem I have with it is the fact that there's a dozen other people going to be clamoring for that position now.
Oh no, the clamoring's over. The whole empire passes to his lawyer son and his preacher son.
Well, there you go. You see, it's just all a monarchy. So, you know, it really doesn't make any sense.
And it's kind of like the splitting of the Roman Empire, Joe. You know, the lawyer son will run the day-to-day legal affairs, and the preacher son will take care of all the fundamentalist hypocrisy.
Right. And the only thing is that in order to get to that position, no one's killed each other yet. Although, you never know. Maybe somebody off Falwell because they thought his time had come. And he won the power. I wouldn't put it past these people. That's all I'm saying.
No, I'm thinking he went like Elvis. You know, they found him collapsed in his office. You know, he had an in-office bathroom.
Did he get the hooker out in time?
I think so, because otherwise they would have had him. They would have done the Rockefeller treatment with him, where he would have been propped up in a chair with his shoes on the wrong feet and the newspaper upside down.
And this is a copy of My Pet Goat in his hand.
Yeah, right.
Well, you know, I'm glad he's not with us. And you know, I'll be perfectly honest, I don't necessarily believe in heaven and hell. I mean, whatever else I feel about God and the sense of whatever greaterness there is out there in the universe, I do not believe in heaven and hell. I think that's all totally crap. I think that was all totally made up stuff. Whatever kind of afterlife there is, if there is any kind of judgment or anything like that, I'm sure Mr. Falwell has a lot to answer for the actions of his life, and Mr. Robertson when his time comes, too.
And Mr. Dobson.
And Mr. Dobson. And, you know, I think it's ironic. Was it Phil who called on your show who called up and said that Reverend Phelps is going to...
No, that was Ben.
Was it Ben?
Yeah.
And that's like, that just cracked me up hearing that, you know, because, you know, and that's just the thing. Phelps made Falwell look sane by comparison. Because Phelps is real. Did you see that music video that he made? It's been pulled off of YouTube. But he did a video to the song We Are the World, but it's called God Hates the World.
No.
And you know, people thought it was a parody because they couldn't be that, you know, they couldn't be that blatant about stuff, but it was like Reverend Phelps' daughter was in the group. And it was really badly sung, actually. I should have saved it from YouTube while it was on there, but that they banned it. Do a search for Google search for God Save the World. You'll see people talking about it. But you can't see the video anymore, unfortunately.
Oh, that's... Yeah.
But, you know, could you imagine a religion with that thing in mind? God hates the world? Are you kidding me?
He made it, and he hates it. No, see... I start trying to get my mind around all that garbage, and it's like you know, I feel like it's Woodstock, and nobody warned me about the brown acid.
Yeah.
So.
And you know, I grew up Catholic, and the Catholics have their own little problems, and then a lot of it is sexual repression, you know, which is why they have so much problem with their priests, because that's what happens when people are denied that relief. But even they're not that crazy to go out and say God hates the world. You know, come on.
Oh, yeah.
And at least, you know, I'll say this for the Catholics. They do a lot of good for poor people. a lot more than any other of the Protestant religions I've ever
seen. They do make some efforts, you know. They've certainly fed a lot more hungry than Jerry Falwell ever did.
Yeah. And, you know, if Catholicism was all right for Mother Teresa, then it can't be all bad, right?
And you know, there's evidence out there. You know, Falwell played fast and loose with the law. He'd get on TV and beg for money from little old ladies who will send in part of their Social Security check and eat cat food for the last 2 weeks of the month. And then he'd take those donations that were for his church and just give it to political operatives.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, he and others realized after a while that they could make a lot more money if instead of stealing old ladies' Social Security checks, they would be putting people in power who helped write their Social Security checks.
Yeah.
And I remember there was a documentary several years ago, and I wish I could remember the name of it or who put it together, but it had to do with Jimmy Carter, and one of the reasons the religious right got politically active was because Jimmy Carter was going to start investigations into all these guys. And they realized that if that happened, the gravy train was over, so they started to fight back. And then they realized how much money there was in all of this, in combination with what you said. Or maybe because of that, that's what they pushed, what you were talking about how freedom of information, but allowing religious people to get free airtime like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's when all of them started. So now they have their own, channels and stuff like that. And Falwell stole the PTO club from Baker and Tammy Faye.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I don't care. You know, Tammy Faye got to live the rest of her life in comfort. She never had to sleep on an air mattress on the floor.
No
wager.
No.
Have to deal with this crap. You know, she had plenty of money.
$126 million. You know that? Sure.
What was God? What was Job's question to God? Why do the righteous suffer? I don't consider myself a particularly righteous person, for crying out loud. I mean, sometimes I wish I didn't have a conscience so I can go out and just rob.
Well, you know, it was a year or so ago, Joe, that we were talking about that whole the Paul Crouch Trinity Broadcasting Network affair. I don't know if you've ever seen it. The guy's wife makes Tammy Faye look like she wears understated makeup. Jan Crouch, that's her name. Just Google her and hit images and start this, just start screaming and just, let your eyes begin to bleed.
Like Jack Nicholson on The Joker?
They bought, yeah, pretty much. Where does he get this wonderful makeup? the TBN crowd bought something near Nashville called Twitty City. Okay, it was a little theme park that Conway Twitty built.
Twitty City.
I think I'm getting this story right. I'll be corrected if I'm not. But they bought it and turned this theme park into their broadcast empire. And they were taxed for their real estate, property taxes. They're in doggone it, can't remember the name of the county right now, in Tennessee. And what happened? They appealed that, and the courts ruled that the county and the state had to pay all their taxes back to them because they were a religious operation that were religiously operating a Ferris wheel. I mean, I don't know if it was a Ferris wheel, but you get the idea.
Yeah, well, what you were saying that reminded me of when Al Bundy on Married with Children, found out about the tax-free stuff. So we created like the Church of Al or something, and it's just, all booze and babes or something like that. And it was all tax-free and stuff, and he was living it up for a while.
Well, I wonder, I don't know, Joe, maybe we should reorganize the horn as a religion.
Sure. We'll take Mark Ferkel from Bartkop. He's got that Church of
Church
Reality.
Church of Reality, yeah. Maybe he could qualify me as a bishop or something.
Sure. You know, Bishop Kincaid of the Church of Reality.
Or, the exalted High Muckluck.
Whatever. And,
I want to be the Noble Lumpkin.
The Noble Lumpkin.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know what I would be, but I don't think I could repeat it on the air.
Snickers and a Coke.
Oh
God, I'm ashamed of myself. Are you settling in? Are things getting a little bit better and normalizing? I mean, what's?
Well, we moved into the new place, which is a really nice place. I mean, it's huge. It's unbelievably huge for a 1,300 $1,500 a month apartment. There's two of us sharing it. So, but the disadvantage was we moved from a furnished place into an unfurnished place, which means we have no furniture. Which means when I say I'm literally laying here on an air mattress on the floor, I am literally laying on an air mattress on the floor. I will. I talked to Agnes beforehand, and come hell or high water, I will be back on the air on Monday, unless my work dictates otherwise. Even if I have to do it on the floor, but I found, while trash picking, I found a very large desktop. And as soon as I can get some milk crates to go underneath it, I can set my computer up and actually use it the way it's supposed to be used. But, we've got a little furniture that my roommate's friends brought over, little dining room table and some chairs. And you know, that's basically it. We just got our gas turned on today. That was a pain in the butt, getting that taken care of. We had a microwave. So
but you don't have any crazy little old ladies wandering around going, I don't like your curtains!
No, but we do have a really crazy family upstairs that pounds like crazy on the ceiling.
Oh, God.
So you go from one to another, but at least they don't come down here.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, so what, they're doing the Macarena upstairs at 3 in the morning?
It's a family, so that means a lot of kids and a lot of yelling.
Ugh.
And that sort of thing. But it's not that big a deal. My roommate, you know, frets about it more than I do, but their lease is up in August, so we're not worried about it, one way or the other.
Well, maybe we'll get to hear some of it when you get back to going live.
Well, I'll stick a microphone up on the ceiling, and you can hear it. It'll make for interesting. Actually, there's some rather loud yelling that goes on from time to time.
Turn down that radio!
No, it's not a radio. They're just yelling at the kids half the time.
Oh.
Very loudly. Get in the room! Shut the door!
We know that.
Oh, God.
Eat your damn peas!
You can't have any pudding if you don't eat your meat.
Exactly.
How can you have any pudding if you don't eat your meat? Oh, God, you moved into the Pink Floyd house.
But, you know, it's just going to take time. We're going to build up the furniture piece by piece. And I've been working a few more hours, and I'm trying to find a second job. And once that happens, I really don't know what the schedule is going to be. That's why I've been a little reluctant to get back on the air, because I really do need to just concentrate on getting my financial situation back in order. Because
yeah.
It sucks being broke, Bob.
No kidding. I mean, I'm... We could commiserate for the next hour. And the thing is, there's a lot of people listening to the program who could commiserate as well.
Oh, and you know, and I know that. My listeners and your listeners, we're all pretty much in the same boat. I mean, no millionaires listen to our show, you know, or no millionaires that care to help out a little bit listen to our show.
Right.
For certain. But, you know, like I keep saying on the show, we all do this because we feel compelled to do this.
Yeah.
And that we feel it's an absolute necessity.
If we were a little bit more religious, we would say we were called to do this.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, and I kind of look to that as a higher calling to a certain extent. Because, you know, I believe as a liberal, I believe that you should believe in something that's greater than yourself. And, you know, the right-wingers, they don't believe that. As far as they're concerned, everything exists for them alone, and when they end...
Well, the self is the higher calling for a right-winger.
Well, what I mean is, you know, they as far as they're concerned, when they die, the world ends. You know, so they really don't care what legacy they leave behind. Just take whatever they can while they're alive, and then you know.
He who dies with the most toys wins.
Exactly, exactly.
And what a sorry, crappy little philosophy to live a life by.
And you know, have you ever noticed with these people, the only time they laugh is when they're putting people down. They can't just. I was remembering a clip of the late Boris Yeltsin with Bill Clinton, and I don't know what Yeltsin did. They were at some sort of appearance together. And Yeltsin must have did something, and Clinton was just laughing out loud. And you can tell it was just kind of a, you know, like he just heard the funniest joke he'd ever heard in his life. He's clutching his belly and just laughing like crazy. Good, heartfelt, human laugh. And you wonder if George Bush ever laughs that way, or if Dick Cheney ever laughs that way.
Only if somebody falls down first.
And, it's always kind of a sneering, you know. You know, like it's an affirmation of their power over other people, or the fact that other people can get hurt and they can't. Yeah. Look at what's going on with the whole Gonzalez thing. I mean, now finally other people are pressing for Gonzalez ouster. But you know what? You know, they'll just get another loyalist. And then you look at how Bush just refused to answer questions about his participation in this. And Atrios and Digby had a great comment about it, saying they're absolutely right. If that had been Bill Clinton or any Democrat doing that, there'd be a nonstop scream fest.
And we'd have a $70 million investigation, Joe.
But because it's George Bush and it's the Republicans, they get away with it. They just, you know, well, that's just the way it is. And they're like, no, that's not just the way it is. The man has been breaking the law. And he just kind of went, And even, you know, and I wrote a post many years ago. Well, I don't know how long ago, but I wrote a post about, and I gave an example of what actually happened. I wrote what actually happened. And what actually happened was Bush called up a reporter from a press conference, put a gun to his head, and blew his brains up, which obviously didn't really happen. But I'm saying, if this was the story, if this is what actually happened, it would not be reported that way by the press. Even the ones that were there, they'd go through hoops to try to figure out a way to explain it. You know, and then the pundits would get on and say, you know, what a bold move by, you know, the president or something like that, protecting himself from a terrorist reporter.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how it is. And all of it really is the influx of corporate money into the political process. And the way we can fix that is, you know, through clean elections and, of course, through accommodation. Because, you know, we could take to the streets with pitchforks and torches, but that only works to a certain extent. You've got to have something really solid behind that once you get through that, because inevitably what goes on after that is far worse than what went on before. I mean, the Reign of Terror was much worse than anything Louis XVI ever did. You know?
Yeah. Well, you know, just as an aside, I guess, Joe, how sad, given the revelations that have come out, how sad is it that John Ashcroft suddenly begins to look like a bulwark against tyranny?
Yeah, isn't that incredible? I mean, here's a man who was literally religiously insane. Well, maybe not literally, but he was religiously insane and insanely loyal to the Bushies. And even he wouldn't sign off on some of this stuff. And I've got no love for him. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm glad he's gone. But you knew Gonzo was going to be worse because of all the stuff that he had done before, trying to find justification for more torture. And then you had this Republican debate where all the candidates were climbing all over each other to say who can torture the most people, and the Republican base are eating it up.
And for heaven's sakes, now it turns out there's a 56 former law school classmates of Fredo Gonzalez have signed an open letter. It was published Tuesday, rebuking Gonzalez for his failure to stand for the rule of law. And,
it's not the rule of law, it's the rule of Bush. What Bush says goes.
Yeah, and you're left with a caricature of the executive branch. You're absolutely right, Joe.
We have, you know, we have a government run by people who hate the very idea of government. They hate the very idea of the democratic process. They hate the very idea of a democratic republic. You know, as far as they're concerned, and I keep repeating myself on this, they are the only people in the world who are human. And everybody else just exists for the sole purpose of putting money in their pocket. And that's it. And I swear to God, there's going to come a day when technology is going to get to the point where cheap labor isn't necessary anymore, where they can do it without cheap labor, and then they just start killing us. And I want to avoid that.
Yeah, yeah. It reminds me of a story my dad used to tell. When he was a little boy, he and his best friend would sneak out, and they'd get a pint of old Overholt or whatever, and go down to the telegraph shack of the CNO down on the river, and they'd take the pint to the telegraph operator, you know, so you could, you know, have some warmth and comfort through the night. You know, never mind the possible horrors. That's just how it shook out. And one night, the telegraph operator looked at the boys and said, "Fellas, if the CNO could build a machine that would replace me, do you suppose they'd put it in?" And the boys said, "Well, that'd be awful. They wouldn't do that. You're too valuable here. It takes a man to do this kind of job." He said, "You're right. They wouldn't put that machine in. They would wait until they'd invented one that had replaced all of the telegraph operators. Then they'd put it in."
Yeah.
And there's a hell of a lot of truth in that. And the story that ran on Labor Radio, but, you know, we run that during your show, too, that ran during Labor Radio before we came back to your call. 28 million American workers have no paid vacation, Joe.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Now, in the rest of the so-called civilized world, most rich countries give between 5 and 13 paid official holidays by law for their workers, in addition to 20 paid vacation days a year.
Well, we're
not us.
It's French and the Germans and the Italians and the British. I don't know about the British anymore.
And I haven't, you know, I mean, sure, you know, well, Nicolas Sarkozy is going to get in there and make France productive again. is there no one able to look at the bigger picture? I mean, look at the French sit around swilling wine, eating entire spoonfuls of fat, and smoking those god awful what are they, Galois or Gitane cigarettes? You know, just lighting them one off the next, and they have less heart disease problems than we do.
They have far less stress than we do
because they are able to look up and go, ah, the hell with it. I'm going to go drink. Yeah, I'm going to the cafe.
Sure, and we can't do that. And I still remember, and again, it's a story I've told before, when I was working at a MCSI down in Alpharetta, we had the guy who was filling up the Coke machines there, and I was in the lunchroom taking my lunch, and the conversation got to going for whatever reason to the election that was coming up, and I mentioned how I thought it ought to be a holiday, and the guy sneered and said, we got too many holidays, we got too many days off. And I'm like, are you kidding me? You know? And it's just like, you know, the attitude...
Yeah, because he's going to lay on his deathbed thinking, dang, I wish I'd had more time at work.
Exactly. And you know, we work till we die. That's the attitude that we have now. And if you're not working constantly, then there's something wrong with you.
You know, and I love... it's part and parcel, I think, of what we all do here, Joe. It's kind of akin to a Frenchman going to the cafe and letting the coffee saucers stack up. And because there's I don't know, maybe I've got an idealized vision of what it's like, but they're still talking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk on the streets and they argue in the cafes and they have real discussions, and the same thing applies to the Italians and the Germans and the Austrians and the Danish and the Dutch and the British, and this idea that somehow or another God, have they just hung an Arbeit Macht Frei, the capitalists or predator class or whatever? Have they just hung Arbeit Macht Frei over the United States? Is that what it boils down to?
Couldn't even tell you.
I mean, you know, that was the sign that hung over Auschwitz. Work makes you free.
Exactly.
You know, work is honorable. Work is decent. Work lends definition to our days and roads upon this planet.
But it's not the do-all and end-all.
No. No, it's what... You know, it's like salt. A little bit goes a long way. Because there's other work of being human that doesn't involve letting somebody tell you to put pegs in holes.
And, you know, that wouldn't even be so bad if the job putting pegs in holes was at least enough to help you pay rent and pay your bills and support yourself.
Right.
And it doesn't even do that anymore. It doesn't do that anymore. And it used to be that way. I mean, my dad was just a regular construction worker for New York. And not like a construction worker. Just like, you know, he filled potholes for the city.
Yeah.
You know, and then just kept the roads in repair and stuff like that. It wasn't very, you know... intelligence intensive, that's not the right term, but you know, it didn't require a lot of brain power. He didn't need a college education, he didn't even need a high school education to do it, but you know what? He could support his family doing it. And that was the important thing. And he could hopefully leave a better life for his kids. Certainly better than what I've got right now.
Mm-hmm.
But the point of the matter is that, you know, he could at least do that and support himself. And the reason why he was able to do it was because he had his Union brothers and sisters there with him. Doing that with him. And you just don't have that today because, you know, there's that attitude that, you know, especially in the South, which is a lot more populated now than it used to be, if you're a unionist, you're a communist. And, you know, I got to tell you, over the weekend, I was at a convention, and I ran into this guy from Kentucky, and he was going on and on and on about how all you see in the newspapers and on TV is somebody getting killed here in Chicago and in these big cities. I come from Kentucky, and that doesn't happen around here, blah, blah, blah. Nobody steals anything. And I was like, yeah, that's because there's nothing to steal down there. What the hell have you got to steal? Who would want to bother? You know, go back to Kentucky.
Forgot to lock my doors last night, and they'd come and they stole my tooth.
Yeah, exactly. You know, God almighty.
And we were sharing that out amongst the family.
And you know, and,
oh, God, I'm awful.
You know what the great thing about the city is, buddy? That there's something to do in the city. You know, I can get out and I can go down to the beautiful lake we have here, Lake Michigan. I can go see a Cubs game. I can go see a White Sox game. I can go to any number of museums. I can go to some great restaurants. You know, there's things to do here. And that's why I love cities. Now, you know, you want to live in the country, that's fine. But
oh, wait till Taste of Chicago hits this summer.
Oh.
You will go wild.
Oh, well, you know, we had this thing recently called a Loopapalooza or something like that. Loopopia.
Yeah.
Where it was a huge, everybody get drunk inside the loop in Chicago. And everybody did. They would go until like 4 in the morning. So, and you know, but you can do things like that. I mean, you know, I've been out in the deep country, and it's like, what is there to do here? I mean, the scenery is beautiful, but for how long can you sit there and look at it? I want to do something. You know, I want to see a play. I want to go watch a ball game or something. You know? And even
exactly.
Here, we got Billings Park right down the street, which is a little field where they play little league games. And I get to watch the kids.
No, you couldn't.
So, anyway, I'm just rambling.
Yeah, Joe, we got to go do the news, man. Good to hear from you. Just shoot me a note. Let me know when I can tell folks that you're coming back. Because
hopefully this Monday, Bob. We'll see.
All right, good deal, man.
Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye. The Cup of Joe radio show airs at 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network every morning. And we hope Joe gets squared away and can come back, come back to the five and dime or what, you know, whatever it is. We miss him. We do. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. News is next. I'm Bob.
This is the Quality News Network. World Bank President Paul Wolfowitz will resign at the end of June. Both he and the bank made that announcement within the last half hour. Wolfowitz has been under fire for weeks about a pay raise he arranged for his girlfriend when he took over the bank position. In its announcement, the bank board accepted that Wolfowitz said he acted ethically and in good faith. Senate Democrats today proposed a no-confidence vote on Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. That, while a fifth GOP senator joined the Republican call for him to resign, Senator Arlen Specter, the top Republican on the Senate Judiciary Committee, predicted today that Gonzalez would resign. Democrats and Republicans did come together, however, today to reach an agreement on the issue of U.S. immigration. Details announced say the bipartisan plan will offer quick legal status to the millions of illegal immigrants currently in the U.S. It also creates a guest worker program and increases border security. President Bush said the proposal is a much-needed solution to the problem. More work needs to be done before the Senate and House have a bill ready to put on his desk. The Census Bureau reports that the minority population in the U.S. is more than 100 million, or about a third of the entire population. Hispanics make up the largest and fastest growing minority group. Four states now have minorities that are actually the majority. And Senate leaders met with the White House chief of staff today on Capitol Hill to discuss the Iraq War funding bill. President Bush vetoed the first spending bill because it contained a timetable for U.S. troop withdrawal from Iraq. A British think tank has published a 12-page report that says the Iraqi government is unable to control vast areas of that country, which is on the verge of collapse. The Chatham House report also indicates that there are several civil wars going on in Iraq, and U.S. security crackdowns, they have failed to cut down the overall violence across that country. In Britain today, the Labour Party confirmed that Gordon Brown has become the sole candidate to take over as leader when Prime Minister Tony Blair steps down in June. And today, trains are crossing through the demilitarized zone between North and South Korea for the first time in more than 50 years. Restoration of the rail link is another step in the reconciliation process between the two countries. This is QNN.
Terry's Lounge at the Cypress Inn in downtown Carmel invites you to a great evening of your favorite foods, beverages, and live music Thursday through Saturday, featuring Dick Whittington and friends from 6 to 9:30. Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn features an appetizer-sized menu and our famous burger, salad, and fries. Afternoon tea, a great local tradition, is served from 1 to 4 p.m. daily by reservation. Sunday evenings are special as Richard Divnick entertains from 5 to 8 p.m. with classical renditions of pop, jazz, and classical music. Join the fun, food, and music at Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn, corner of Lincoln and 7th. In downtown Carmel.
Marine biologists are still trying to lure an injured humpback whale and her calf out of a Sacramento shipping channel. They were unsuccessful earlier when they tried to use whale song to induce the whales to leave. Scientists at Pennsylvania's School of Medicine say they found a way to make mice regrow hair follicles. This could possibly lead to treatments for baldness in humans. The study is in the journal Nature. Defense Department scientists have discovered low-level exposure to sarin gas can cause permanent brain damage. That's according to a New York Times report. Many U.S. troops came into contact with the poisonous gas during the first Gulf War. The findings may serve as an explanation for the reported Gulf War syndrome among those troops. The USDA says a meat company based in Michigan is recalling 129,000 pounds of beef because of possible E. coli contamination. The meat products are made for Gordon Food Service stores. New York's Attorney General Andrew Cuomo is suing Dell Computer for fraud, false advertising, and deceptive business practices. The computer company is accused of failing to deliver as promised to customers, and the bait-and-switch advertising on its financing. Light sweet crude is trading at $65.86 a barrel. The Dow closed down 11 points. The NASDAQ down 8. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Back we go. 12 past the hour, and you may have just heard the story on the sarin gas exposure revelations that came out in the New York Times today. The author of that piece, Ian Urbina. I worry a little bit, and we're going right back to the phones, I promise. I worry a little bit because stories like that, but ignorance is the literal footers and foundation of Republican policy. And you know that somewhere out there, somebody hears that or sees the first couple of sentences. See, they found Saddam's WMD. See, that's why we had to go to Iraq. Is get the damn it. The sad fact out of this is that this all happened in March of 1991, a few days after the end of the Gulf War. Saddam never used any chemical weapons on American troops. But far be it from the Republicans to point that out if any of them decide to declare that, they was chemical weapons. What happened was American troops at the end of the war exploded two huge stockpiles of ammunition and missiles in a place called Qamishia, Iraq. And some of the missiles contained sarin and cyclosarin. And the wind patterns and the plume caused more than 100,000 American troops, 100,000 American soldiers, to have been exposed to at least small amounts of the gases, which are apparently enough to screw your world. So, who's to blame for this?
Another Bush. Of course. Let's go to the phones. David is calling with an update from Tennessee. Hey, David, welcome back.
Well, Bob, it's not really an update. It's more of a retrospective. You were talking about Paul and his lovely wife.
Oh, boy, and lovely, you certainly use that term loosely, don't you?
Oh, lovely. She of the glowing pink champagne hair and the eyelashes that require toothpicks to keep the lids up.
Oh, I know.
She does that wonderful thing where she talks about baby dolls, our little children in Costa Rica.
Yeah, oh, God, see, I'm going to have nightmares now.
And she's standing next to the cinder block foundation for a hospital they've been going to build for 4 years.
Right.
Well, anyway, if you want the story on their little installation in Hendersonville, Tennessee, I can take care of that for you pretty quick.
Okay. Was it Twitty City? Is it the former Twitty City?
It's the former Twitty City, Conway Twitty, country singer, insanely wealthy, nice man. His body betrayed him, and after building a nice little amusement park with a studio, with a massive dance hall, he would bring bands in there 3 nights a week, and I know lots of people in this area, and I live in the same county where that's contained. People went there and had a great time 3 nights a week because you could go and dance and be safe and have a great time, and they'd start with square dances, and they'd move on to, you know, easygoing rock and roll. And
in other words, wholesome American family entertainment.
Exactly. The last 5 songs were always buckle polishers so that somebody could go home together. Anyway.
Yeah.
His body betrayed.
Buckle polishers. There's one for the book.
That's what those songs are called, where kickers dance.
Okay.
Just a trifle. Bit of trivia there for you. Anyway, he died. And when people die that own very peculiar properties, they're either going to become a Chinese restaurant or B, a religious theme park. That's the only two people that can afford to buy that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So after Twitty City had remained vacant for quite some time, the Crouches moved in and said, we'll take it,
and probably got it pretty much on the cheap.
They did, based on what Conway had put out to build it. They bought it on the cheap. Now then, it had been on the tax rolls in Sumner County, Tennessee, to the tune of about $500,000 per year, because it was what it was.
And entertainment, and yeah.
Yeah. It was a business, and it was on the tax rolls, and it contributed $500,000 to the school system, at school spelled with all capital letters, system, in Sumner County, Tennessee. So, the Crouches move in, and they spend buckets of money doing all the things the religious nuts want to do to make it look religious, because they wanted a Fundy Branson. So they never really quibbled with the fact that it was on the tax roll. And things are going along apace, and Sumner County is thrilled that they're going to have that money back in the coffers. And lo and behold, the Crouch family mafia decides to put a sign across the road from said compound that is insanely large. Oops, there's a signage regulation within the confines of Hendersonville and certain areas of Sumner County. A sign shall not be larger than nor blank with this more than this wattage, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And Sumner County says to them and Hendersonville, hold on, that sign's a little over the top there, folks. And the word came back, that's God's will, we should have a sign that big. You're heathens, and we're not going to listen to you. And Sumner County said, no, now wait a second. It's the law of this county. And they said, no, you don't understand. It's God's will, the sign should be as we say the sign should be. Now, then, the reason I know this is I've seen the interview where Paul himself sits staring into the camera, and he says, and I quote,
if those people in Tennessee had just acknowledged the fact that God wanted our signage to be as beautiful and splendid as we knew he wanted it, we would have never challenged our tax status. But when they challenged God's will, we knew we had to put our legal resources into this matter.
Oh, brother.
True story. They spent a lot of dough revising this, changing that, tweaking the charter, taking it to court, who knows whatever else, and they reversed everything to the point that that $500,000 was taken off tax rolls forever, because that whole area with gift shops, where you go and pay to see a show centered around the acts they want to have there, where people pay to be there, they got the whole thing treated as if it's a corner church in a tough neighborhood ministering to the poor.
Jesus.
So Sumner County had $500,000 of tax dollars taken away from it because Paul Krauts said it's the will of God.
Sumner County had to write a check, didn't they?
They had to rebate it.
Yeah.
Because they had already paid some of it. $200,000 had to go the other way. And my assessment on my house is percentage tenth different than it was before that happened. True story. So there's the religious right at their best.
So basically you and other residents of Sumner County are paying to subsidize Paul and Jan Crouch and her wig fix.
Exactly. Because they copped an attitude about, no, you can't have a sign the size of Dallas, because we have passed law. No, you don't understand. God's law transcends Sumner County. Never mind you people. And let me tell you something. You will have a tough time to this day finding anybody that lives in this county. Doesn't matter whether you live in my little burg, or you live in Gallatin, or you live in Hendersonville, or you live in any of the little burgs that are in Sumner County.
Is Goodlettsville in Sumner County?
I'm sorry?
Is Goodlettsville in Sumner County?
That's a close call.
Okay.
Goodlettsville is one town closer towards Nashville. I'm not sure it might be. I'm not that well versed.
See, I have a feeling I know why the signage law came around, because, I mean, there's no direct connection, but way, way, way back when, before I-65 was fully formed, you had to get off and do some 31W when you were going back and forth from Alabama to West Virginia.
Well, you bet you did.
And you went through Goodlettsville and Hendersonville, 11-mile pike. And it was, and if you're a weary furnace operator who's a father of five, operating a 1966 Chrysler Newport Town Sedan
with the muffler wired on.
No, that was the 71 Newport.
Oh, my mistake. Bad joke.
You know, we're just my family. We're just like junkies. We keep buying Mopar, and we don't learn.
They made some fine engines. The torque flight's the best automatic transmission ever.
But you're a little weary, and you're on your way south, and you get off the road, and you have to go through Hendersonville and Goodlettsville, and there are 900 million dozen. Signs for Loco Joe's and Crazy Charlie's fireworks, and they're blinking, and they're spinning, and they're flashing, and they're buzzing, and I mean, it was an 11-mile swear fest.
Yep.
You know, and it just, you know, damn it, Margaret, they got to do something about these signs.
Well, and the other one that a lot of people finally reacted to, you know, Old Hickory Lake, it's all interspersed, under the road, over, it's all through there. And when somebody in the mid to late 1960s on into the 70s figured out, wait a second, these strobe lights have this incredible power. If I trigger one of those things to blink every 4 seconds, they'll really see my sign. And they would face them so that this 10 bazillion watt strobe light cracked open, and you were blind for a couple of seconds, and people were driving into the lake because they were blinded by these strobe lights. So Sumner County, Hendersonville, et cetera, so wait a second, for the public good, and so this doesn't look like...
But it turns out that God wasn't in favor.
Nope. God didn't care that the Crouches wanted a sign that would resemble, should whorehouses be legal around the world, the most extensive advertising instrument for the purpose of prostitution ever, with all the garishness and gaudiness it could possess. Nope.
Well, you know that Jan Crouch was the design guru behind all that.
Oh, I'm sure it had hot pink integrated into the sign.
Jesus, ouch. David, thank you so much, man.
Anytime. Thanks for letting me.
No, thanks for reviving that one another wonderful memory. Yeah, that it was turquoise, by the way. Turquoise metallic. The 1966 Chrysler Newport Town Sedan.
But when it was running,
it ran, you know, it ran like a top. And
it could do 90 often enough to make your mother nerd.
With matching turquoise jacquard cloth interior. And for a 66, air conditioning.
Ooh, now we're talking.
Yeah, boy, crank windows, but air conditioning.
See you later.
Later. Bye now.
Bye.
And onward to Gerard. Hey, Gerard, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing good. I just wanted to call up and give you some feedback on the Horn Radio Network.
Okay.
I was listening today, which I often do, to Tom Hartman, and I think David from Maine was referenced the show today too. And I like Tom Hartman. I had listened to him quite a bit. He had a nice forum going with a live audience there. And but we got to the end of the program, and he's on Air America, and it got to the end of his program, and I hear, and tonight on NBC, who's a movie star? See if they break up with the other actress on the show, and da-da-da-da-da, you know. They're advertising television shows on NBC. And, you know, I don't make judgments about people, how people choose to entertain themselves.
Sure.
And if they want to watch Grey's Anatomy, that's fine, you know. But the thing that got me, and the thing that kind of in the back of my head, because just having listened to Tom Hartman, and he's, you know, he's a lot like you are. He's a student of history, and he knows, you know, a lot about it, and the different people throughout the show were, you know, drawing parallels between the Bush administration and the Nixon days. And I just, when I heard that ad for NBC, I immediately flashed on the old quote from our good born again friend Charlie Colson from the Nixon era.
Oh, good old Chuck.
Where he said, when you got them by the balls, their minds will... And I don't know thing one about... I know more about juggling elephants than I do about running a radio station.
Right.
But, and let alone a...
Same here.
A radio network, you know. But it just seemed to me that here we've got Air America, and kind of the thinking back historically, the reasons why, stations like the Horn and Air America came into existence, because there was no alternative to networks like NBC and media outlets like NBC and CBS and ABC and CNN, who were, you know, who were basically complicit in getting us into this whole mess.
Yeah. But you remember when Larry Darrell and Darrell would show up on the old Newhart show?
Yeah.
And they had the business going, and what was their business? Anything for a buck?
Yeah.
Welcome to operating on the traditional right-wing commercial radio model. Anything for a buck. We'll advertise television that's running up against our own radio programming. What the hell? We'll slit our throat for a buck.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I know Air America just changed hands not long ago, and you know, I'm glad for the content that's getting out there.
You know, I like Tom Hartman. I like Randy Rhoads. I like, you know, what they're saying and what they got to say. Don't always agree with all of it, but I'm glad it's out there. But I just, I'm so grateful for the horn because of the way you guys are doing it. I know it has a lot to do with the technology that's available to you. I keep going back to that movie, Bound for Glory, about the life of Woody Guthrie. And there's a scene in there where he's got a radio show out in California, and they want to promote him, and they want to, you know, and there was some issue about that, if he would do this, if he would just do what the sponsors asked him to do, things would be okay. But if not, then his radio show might be in jeopardy, and he just said he wanted none of it. He said, I got to stay next to the people. You know, I'm doing what I'm doing today because I'm staying next to the people, and I'm listening to them, and my songs are speaking for them. And, you know, it just really jangled my nerves and really made me grateful for the horn. I'm glad for the way you guys do things.
Oh, God, that's so nice of you to say.
You know, I'm glad that there's a guy sitting on an air mattress in Chicago who can have a radio program, you know, and
speak his truth.
I enjoyed your, you know, your conversation with Joe. You know, it's just because to me that's just like the fact that, like Joe always says, you know, it's the workers of the world who get things done. It's just, and kind of what you in your conversation with him, what you were saying about, you know, the Europeans sitting in cafes discussing things, you know, that's how things get done, I think. With that person to person, and then a smaller group of people getting together and discussing things, and you know, and
well, look at the transfer of power they had in France yesterday.
Yeah.
Now they had their election last week, and they had their inauguration yesterday, and there wasn't a $50 million orgy in the streets of Paris. You know, from what I heard, the reportage I heard, Chirac. Or was it Chirac, took Sarkozy into the office for 30 minutes so he could transfer the nuclear codes to him, shook his hand, gave him an apple and a roadmap, and left.
Yeah.
And you know, and people hate him, and what, you know, French politics is actually, I think, a healthier brand of politics than we have here.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if they don't like it, they will get out in the streets, and if the train workers strike, the daggum municipal judges will strike right behind them, and everything will grind to a halt till the train workers are happy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a bad thing.
No, I don't think so. You know, I'm thinking back to, you know, you mentioned inauguration. Thinking back to Reagan's inauguration, I can remember a scene maybe this kind of, you know, precluded or pre-visioned the Bush era, but I can remember a scene at the inaugural balls where Reagan comes out on this dais, and he and Nancy have these huge, I mean, these chairs had to be 8 to 10 feet tall.
Yeah, thrones.
Huge plus chairs, which were thrones, was what they were. And they were purple, too. And, you know, I just thought, man, what are we doing here? Are we crowning a king? And it's, you know, I just, like I say, I just wanted to phone in and express my gratitude for the horn. I really, you know, and it's, you know, not only the horn, but, you know, people, the effect that, especially in the last election, that the bloggers have had. You know, we just got to keep at this. We just got to.
Yeah, and we've just all we have to do, Gerard, is find a way to survive.
Yep.
You know, I don't ever want to get to the point where I don't know what I'd do if NBC came and said, "Hey, would you hustle our programming that's running during your show, Bob? I mean, you know, tell people to go watch our show instead of listening to you. Here's $1 million." What would I do? I don't know. I honestly don't know, but we're trying every day. We're scrubbing our brains trying to figure out a way not to whore ourselves out and yet somehow make enough money to stay at doing what we're doing.
Well, and I think you guys get a lot done. When I look at the website now and the kind of programming that goes on, I think you're getting a lot done for what you're, you know, what people, you know, what people that financial research that you're able.
Well, I'm convinced that we're on top of something new and different, and altogether 180 degrees from the way that anybody else is doing it. Because it relies on people's goodwill, it relies on people's volunteer efforts. I mean, the moderators in the chat room to the news ninjas, John Fox just absolutely killed himself getting the new website design up. And I don't want to toot Agnes and my trumpet too hard, but you know, we're kind of locked down behind the board here more than we probably ought to be. And, you know, some of that, it's a starting place. We want to change and we want to grow. We want to get to the point where we're walking the walk that we're talking the talk about. I want everybody who is associated with this network to have, you know, health care, to have a pension. I want to be able to pay people.
Mm-hmm.
It's not there yet.
Yeah.
But, you know, if a couple of things fall into place, things change, things grow, things get better, and they remain very, very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Bless his heart, Mike Malloy said some lovely, wonderful things about this effort last night in a conversation on his show with John Fox, and I thank him so much for alerting people to our existence.
Yeah.
You know, it's so exciting. I don't know how to say it, Gerard. There are evenings it's hard to open up the mic, just because there's so much death and destruction and damnation and misery, and it seems like we always wind up talking about it. But by the end of the program, I always feel sort of cleansed,
mm-hmm.
and I hope other people do as well.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to keep repeating the same thing, but. I'm really grateful for what you do, and I got a little story for you.
Okay.
This kind of has to do with, kind of ties in with Falwell and his belt character. When I was about 21 years old, I had a girlfriend that I had met in college, and she graduated and went to law school at the University of San Francisco Law School. And so I decided to follow her out to California, and it was, you know, just a 21-year-old kid from the Midwest, had never really been in a big metropolitan city before. But I got out there and decided, well, I better go find some means to support myself, and I had been working in the restaurant business, so I decided to go down to the financial district and look, you know, check into the restaurants there, see if I could get some work. I'm walking down the street in the middle of downtown, and there's two street preachers out, one on one corner and one on the other. And I had set up an interview at this one restaurant, so I'm looking at all the sites in the city as I'm going down there. And I see these two street preachers, and one looks pretty much like a bag lady, but she's got a Bible out there, and she's standing and you know, preaching the fire and brimstone, and there's another guy standing on the opposite corner, and he's got a black suit on and a white starched shirt, and he looks very clean and proper, but he's out there preaching too, and he's preaching the fire and brimstone just like she is. Well, I go to the interview, and then I come back walking back the same way to catch the bus back to the apartment I was at, and they're both on the same corner. And this time they're nose to nose, and they're going.
Oh, they're brimstoning each other.
Brimstoning each other. They're just going, you're going to hell. No, you're going to hell. No, you're going. You know, and it just kind of reminds me of when you were talking about Falwell and Pulp. There, I just that image came into my mind.
So, well, yeah, and there's that great joke. Stephen. Can't remember his name now. The really deadpan humorist comedian tells the story that the
Stephen Wright.
Yeah, Stephen Wright. Yeah. Stephen Wright, and the two guys talking. and the conversation turns to religion and goes, well, I'm a Baptist. The guy goes, really? Southern or American? American. Me too. I'm American Baptist. You American Baptist Reformed or American Baptist Free Will? American Baptist Free Will. Me too. Sir, are you American Baptist Free Will, the Free Will Southern Conference? Or American Free Will Reformed American Conference? American Conference. I'm Southern Conference. Die, heretic!
Yeah, it kind of says it all, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. Gerard, good hearing from you, buddy.
Yeah, you take care, Bob.
All right, you too. Bye now. I love that joke. Preston is with us, calling from Denver. Hey, Preston.
Hi, Bob.
Staying away from the plague-ridden squirrels in Denver?
Actually, I continue to feed them.
Good for you.
Yeah, yeah. And it's kind
if you're not eating them, you'll do okay. You know, they carry mad squirrel disease, too.
Yeah, yeah. And, but anyway, Tom Hartman actually came through town today.
Yeah, so I'm hearing. Must have been a pretty good show.
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't able to make it. I was at work. Actually, I work with the Department of Revenue here in Colorado.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, I'd like your previous callers to add that my work doesn't involve much, you know, mental work at all, but I kind of like it that way because I can listen to talk radio and I'm also listening to some Learn Spanish CDs and stuff like that.
That's wonderful.
It is. It is. And sometimes I do feel overworked, though. I mean, the 40 hours a week, it is a lot. And I found this little factoid that says, in 1938, the Nazis began sending, quote, work-shy elements to Buchenwald. Idlers were marked with a black triangle.
Ew.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting.
Idlers.
Yeah, yeah.
Malcontents. Malingerers.
Exactly.
But, you know, that's in many ways, I kind of, what you just described your work life as, Preston, is really admirable, because there should be some way, you know, my father time after time said, I was the luckiest man in the world because I loved what I did for a living. And so he got it, you know, he was happy, he was thrilled to get up and go to work every day. Even if he came home swearing, you know, he loved it. I think that's the trick, and I don't think we pay enough attention to it in this country. Helping people to find the thing that they can do and love what they're doing.
Yeah, to find good work that we can feel good about, that serves a real need. You know, so oftentimes we define a good job as one that just pays well.
Yeah.
And that's important, and to have benefits, but what are we doing, actually? Are we going to Raytheon and building cluster bombs or Halliburton?
And a lot of those good jobs are the reason they pay like they do is there is an inherent deal with the devil in taking it.
Yep. There you go. I am happy to say, though, here in Colorado, we're going to be creating about 400 good jobs, good paying and good work. A company called Vesta, which is from Denmark, is opening a wind turbine factory here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's really exciting. So, yeah, they're going to start building it.
Too late for me to get an application in?
There's probably still time. It's going to be just a little bit north and east here of Denver.
See, I want to... Gerard and I were just talking about, you know, how it is that we make it possible for the horn to continue and everything. I would love to talk to a company like that and say, listen, your head is in the same place that our heart is.
Yep.
And, you know, let us make people more publicly aware of what you're doing and help us stay on the, and, you know, do it for cheap.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't know, maybe when that thing gets going, maybe it's time for a phone call or something, because I really like the idea of making, how can I put this? You know, the same thing with what you and I are talking about in terms of work. Having the same philosophy carry over into what we're doing here with the horn. There are people out there that we would be proud and honored to encourage people to participate in, purchase, do whatever.
Definitely.
And we do that sort of thing. It's why we're associated with No Sweat.
Which reminds me, I bought a T-shirt from them a couple weeks back.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah. Although I may have done something when I was ordering online. I may have forgotten the last click or something, so I'm going to send them an email. But I already did send them an email and told them I heard about their store through you.
Oh, wonderful.
So, yeah, there are a lot of stores like No Sweat. And
well, I really want to get some of their Palestinian T-shirts. I think that's just a beautiful outreach and a real step toward peace.
Definitely. Did I hear you say that you have a MySpace page?
Yes, I do.
Okay, I'll have to try to find that sometime.
It's just myspace.com/Bob Kincaid.
Okay. Do you have a link to Head On Radio?
Yeah, I think there is up there, but frankly, I'm so technologically backward, I haven't done everything with it that I need to do yet. I need to figure out how to do MySpace layout and all that stuff so that I can make it be a real promotional site.
Yeah, I'm the same way. You know, I've done the bare minimum for my own page, but like you, you know, I've clicked on other people's pages and gone to their friends, and just the further I go into it, I just really find it fascinating and inspiring in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the very creative things that people are doing. In fact, I first heard about MySpace from Democracy Now, where they were interviewing a young Latino in California, and they asked him how he organized an immigrants' rights march. And he said he got on MySpace and contacted a lot of his friends through that. And I was like, well, I've got to check that out. And it's interesting how the media, if you're just hear the mainstream media talk about MySpace, you'd think it was nothing but, you know, child predators and, you know, people working various scams, and which isn't to say that that doesn't happen. You know, there is that element.
Oh, I turned down probably 10 porno friend editions a day.
Right.
And they all say, that, hi, I just got onto this MySpace thing, and I don't really know how it works, and I'd love to post my nude pictures, but MySpace won't let me, so you can go over here to this website, and I'm fully nude, and I've got a webcam. Click, deny, you know.
That's what a hassle.
But, you know, it's okay, because I don't want to set my site to private. I want people to be able to find it. I've met a lot of cool bands that have linked up, and with one of the people we met, we played her music a couple of weeks ago, Will Maring. She's a gorgeous voice, beautiful songs, uplifting stuff. Never would have known about her without MySpace, and I found her because I drilled down through two or three friends' worth of layers, and there she was.
Yep, that's how I found some incredible hip-hop music from Mexico City.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, guys rapping about campesinos and their struggle for the land and women's rights and neoliberalism. In fact, this one group I found from Colombia, they were singing about, you know, human rights and labor organizers being killed by the corrupt government. They were starting to get death threats, and then Amnesty International contacted them and sent them on a tour in England, actually, you know, just to show support.
Yeah.
And help them out. And, yeah, there's amazing. That hip-hop has become like a worldwide art form. And again, it can be very, I think, negative in a way, in some cases. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's all Bill O'Reilly and people like that are talking about, how, you know, they try to take this cultural movement.
They do that, though, for a reason, Preston, because I personally believe, and this is kind of tinfoil hat-ish, but I personally believe that they know, the O'Reillys and Hannitys of the world, what kind of power is contained within something like an art form like hip-hop, and they know the social commentary and the cultural commentary that's being made through it. So if they can marginalize it and demonize it, and, you know, well, there's nothing in there but gangsta rap and everybody talking about hoes.
Right. That's exactly why they do it. They're very familiar with the politically conscious and progressive elements of that art form, and they're very concerned by it. In fact, if you listen to that stuff, the right-wing talk radio, you can really find out how big our movement is, because what they're complaining about is all these feminists out there and all these civil rights workers and all these environmentalists.
Mm-hmm.
And even some of their own, you know, now Ron Paul, they've got to attack him systematically because he was saying all these...
Well, he spoke a little bit of truth about Iraq.
There you go. He said something, I missed the debates, but I heard snippets here and there. I heard Randy Rhodes replayed some of it. At one point, he made a comment about how he thought it was kind of ridiculous that we thought the Arab countries were going to destroy Western civilization. He's like, you know, we're talking about countries that don't even have a navy or an air force. And, yeah.
Yeah, never let facts get in the way, though. Yeah, because Rudy's never going to get on defense again. You know, I love the way they use these football analogies and stuff. If Rudy's never going to get on defense again, that means the offense is just going to march up and down the field and score points. You know, what a bunch of dummies.
Right, right. It takes a good defense to win championships.
Nope, it's going to be nothing but wide receivers and quarterbacks. Don't need no tackles.
Exactly. And Ron Paul dared to say something really crazy, like talking about making friends of other countries and things like that.
Well, didn't Ron Paul also, or was this just wishful thinking? Didn't he also implicate AIPAC and Israel's influence in some of this as well?
I don't know. I didn't hear that. He may have.
Okay, I may have been on drugs or something. That was the night of the Falwell show, and I'm not entirely responsible for anything that happened that day.
Okay.
I was too busy celebrating.
I also wanted to mention your caller David.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of days ago, he was reading from an article from the Nuclear Information and Resource Service.
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to let him know that I wrote them an email, and I mentioned to them that their group is being spoken about on Head On Radio, and they might want to tune in, and if they get a chance to even call in and talk about their organization and the work they do. And I don't know if they're going to, you know, pay attention to that, but I remember you saying that so many progressive organizations and authors, you know, don't contact you.
Right.
Often hear from the right wing.
And it's not just me. It's across the board.
Yeah.
The infrastructure just isn't there.
Yep. And
so, you know, I appreciate you doing that, because maybe that means steps like that help us build the infrastructure.
Little networking steps, I think, make all the difference.
And the thing is, the stuff that I do get from time to time from the progressive side of the aisle, By comparison, what I get routinely from the right wingers is, you know, homosexuals killing Ford Motor Company. I get, you know, Israeli school hit by a rocket attack, how John Cox is the second coming of Ronald Reagan. Just crazy out there stuff.
Yeah.
But when I do occasionally get contacted by the progressive side of the discussion, I get such cool stuff. And I don't mean they're like sending me keychains or anything, but I get it. I'm an information freak, Preston.
Yeah.
And I've got to get in touch with somebody and get an interview set up on a couple of books I just read. To me, free books is like free food. There's one that has to do. I think it's called Everything Is Miscellaneous. Mm-hmm. And it's about the way we will go into the future and the way we will deal with information. And it starts with alphabetization and goes forward. It's brilliant. And the other one is has to do with the lost history and future of America's the lost history of America's energy dependence and future by a guy who's MIT trained and is a professor out in Colorado now.
Huh.
I don't know if he'd qualify himself as a right winger or a left winger or any kind of a winger. He's just a really smart guy.
Okay.
And the book is absolutely. I'll have to get it, because right now it's by the bed table. That's my nighttime reading before bed. But you know, it's brilliant because it starts out with a discussion of evolution. There's a discussion in there of the rise of energy dependence. A brilliant comparison between the Mayan society of Tikal and London of the same time, you know, about 1000 AD.
Oh, wow.
And he points out very brilliantly that Tikal
and London would have fallen at about the same time, but for a happy accident in England. You know, just the kind of stuff that my brain just eats up. I didn't realize it, but you've been down that way, right, Preston?
Yes, I have.
You've seen some of the pyramids and so forth?
Yeah, and it's amazing. And
well, they relied, even though they built with that limestone and they built so brilliantly, you know, so that they needed no mortar, no cement, no nothing, they had a passion for plastering it.
Okay.
And they made the plaster with quicklime. And you have to make quicklime, you have to heat a fire to about 1300 degrees Fahrenheit, and at that temperature limestone breaks down into quicklime so that you can make your plaster. And they were so obsessed with plastering all these giant edifices that they deforested themselves and they had no other alternative fuels.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then, boom, the culture collapsed.
I know one of their pyramids, they have during the solstice or something like that, when the sun comes up, there's the shadow that's created, and it's as if a snake is coming down the steps of the pyramid. And people go there during this day and... You know,
yeah, that's at I believe that's at Chichen Itza.
Okay.
And it's the snake sculpture of Quetzalcoatl.
Okay.
And it's either on the solstice or the equinoxes when it literally precedes down the pyramid, and it's said to be a very, very stirring thing.
Okay.
That by the way, I got a question, Preston, from one of the listeners wanting to know if that Mexican band you were referring to might have been Molotov.
It's not Molotov, although I'm familiar with their work. Who I was referring to is a guy named Akil Amar, and he has a CD called Mellow Karma. In fact, one of the songs called Resist,
mm-hmm.
he starts it out with a clip from a Howard Zinn speech.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and Zinn is saying, I'm going to say a lot of things tonight, but it's important that you just remember two words. Governments lie. And then he breaks into the song. It's all in Spanish. And I only understand about 20% of it, but the beat of it, the spirit of it is just so fantastic. In fact, I'll have to send you a copy. I think you'd enjoy it.
Oh, I'd love that.
And also, if you don't get it for free, I'm going to have to send you a copy of a book that I've really been enjoying called Blessed Unrest by Paul Hawken.
Mm-hmm.
And the subtitle is How the Largest Movement in the World Came into Being and Why No One Saw It Coming. And he basically talks about, well, he starts about the 1,000 or so talks he's been given around the country over the past 10 years. And at each talk, you know, people give him their business cards or their brochures or their organization, what kind of work they're doing. And he started to pile up all these cards, and he was curious, you know, how many organizations are there? And he writes, over the years, he counted thousands of cards, and he began to count government records for different countries using various methods to approximate the number of environmental and social justice groups from a tax data census and other...
I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
Preston, I hate to cut you short, but we've got to roll. We're at that time.
Okay. Well, good speaking with you. Happy travels.
Yeah, if they happen. Otherwise, I'll be here tomorrow night.
Okay, sounds
all right.
Good.
Take care.
You too.
Bye. Bye now. Good friend Preston in Denver. Like I said, I always feel cleansed. I feel better at the end of the show than I did going in. And that's because of you guys. That's thunder. We'll be unplugging the phones now, thanks. The show tonight, of course, was produced by my lovely, darling, talented wife, Agnes. Our engineer is John Fox. Our IT professional is Peter Godbold. Our announcer is Brian Reznor. The hardest working man in liberal talk is Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. If you value what goes on here at the Horn, then you value Ben Birch, and you need to show him that, not with a laurel and hearty handshake, but with a cash donation. Please, if you are able. Of course, many thanks always go out to the United Brotherhood of Carpenters, who, by providing the startup support for this network, are helping us to save the American dream. And Liza, don't worry, it's only noise. It's just thunder, sweetheart.
But always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
Resolved between the Senate and House before a bill goes before the President. The Census Bureau reports that the minority population in the U.S. is more than 100 million, or about a third of the entire population. Hispanics make up the largest and fastest growing minority group. Four states now have minority majorities. They are New Mexico, California, Texas, and Hawaii. An agreement has been reached regarding the resignation of World Bank President Paul Wolfowitz. He and the board have chosen June 30th for his departure date. The board said, quote, it was clear that a number of people had erred in reviewing the pay package, end quote, for his girlfriend. Gordon Brown has become the sole candidate to take over the Labour Party's leadership in England and succeed Prime Minister Blair, who leaves office at the end of June. Brown promised to uphold Britain's strong bond with the United States. On his last official visit to the U.S., Mr. Blair met with President Bush, and the two held a press conference today in the White House Rose Garden. Both defended their decision to go to war in Iraq and maintain the fight. Blair said, quote, this is a fight we cannot afford to lose, end quote. Diplomats from the U.S. and Iran have agreed to May 28th to discuss security in Iraq. The negotiations will take place in Baghdad and come at the request of Iraqi leaders. Fingerprints on an Al-Qaeda terrorist camp application match those of Jose Padilla, on trial now for alleged terrorist ties. That testimony came today from a Secret Service expert. Despite a ceasefire to end the recent fighting between the Hamas and Fatah factions in Gaza, five more Palestinians have died in the conflict. Israel also launched three airstrikes against Hamas today in response to the repeated rocket attacks by Hamas. Three Palestinians were killed in that action. Recent bombings by al-Qaeda dissuaded many Algerians from voting today. Less than 20% of the North African nation's 18